It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. We have a great panel. Ant Pruitt is here. Christina Warren is here. Ian Thompson is here. My buddies, we're going to talk about bacon buddies. We'll talk about Zoom. Have they let us down for the last time? Apple's big announcement, moving to ARM. What's that going to look like? And how did HBO yank Gone with the Wind and then it became number one on iTunes? It's all coming up next on TWiT. This Week in Tech comes to you from TWiT's LastPass studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remotely. Visit LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT This Week in Tech, episode 775, recorded Sunday, June 14th, 2020. Bacon Buddies. This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by Zendesk. Zendesk is a service-first CRM company that builds software designed to improve customer relationships. Right now, Zendesk is offering a complimentary 6-month remote support bundle that comes with the essential tools your team needs to stay agile. And it takes hours, not weeks, to get up and running. Go to Zendesk.com/TWiT to get started. And by Casper. Casper is a sleep brand that makes expertly designed products to help you get your best rest, one night at a time. Get $100 towards select mattresses by visiting Casper.com/TWiT1 and using the promo code TWIT1 at checkout. And by Stamps.com. Anything you can do at the post office, you can do at Stamps.com. Stamps.com on-demand postage means you can skip that trip for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and enter the code TWIT. And by Worldwide Technology. Worldwide Technology's advanced technology center is like no other testing and research lab, with more than $500 million of equipment, including OEMs like Dell EMC. And it's virtual, so you can access it 24/7. To learn more and get insights into everything it offers, go to wwt.com/TWIT. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Our weekly tech news roundtable. We bring in my favorite people. Every week, it's my favorite people. People might think that's inconsistent, but you're all my favorite people. I love Ian Thompson from The Register, not theregister.co.uk, theregister.com.
Times have changed.
Wow, that's awesome.
We've got big boy pants now.
Yeah, you still look a little bit like James Bond, but that's okay. That's okay. Actually, you look more like, who is Terry, the guy with the gaff teeth?
Terry Thomas?
Terry Thomas.
Oh, ding dong.
Exactly. My point exactly. Also,
well, I was accused of, when drunk, turning into a very drunk Terry Thomas on a couple of occasions. So, yes, that's apt.
If you put a little gap between your teeth, only people my age would recognize it, but it would be pretty good. I'm just
rather.
Terry Thomas. Yeah. And also with us from Microsoft, Film Girl is here. Christina Warren. It's good to see you, Senior Cloud Advocate at Microsoft.
Good to be here.
Yay.
Good to be here.
Different camera today. I'm liking it.
Yes. Yes. I'm using, you know, with us all having to work from home and whatnot, I bought a more expensive, mirrorless camera than I needed. And have been doing the whole Cam Link
really looks good.
Setup. But
really
yeah, good. I like it.
Super clear. Really nice. What camera?
This is the Sony A6400.
You didn't get, Sony has a new vlogger camera. You didn't get that.
I know. And I was annoyed, right? Because the reason I bought this one was because my RX 100 Mark
I love
5A.
That
RX 100. Yeah. I do too. Here's the problem. The 5A will shut off if it's on, even if it's not recording for like more than 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't use it as like an external camera, even though it would have been perfect. And I'm annoyed because I spent like $1,000 on that camera like 18 months ago. So I was pretty annoyed that I was like, I'm gonna have to buy another camera. And of course I buy the A6400 because I could have gotten something less expensive, but I just went for it. And then like literally within a month of me buying it, they came up with a new vlogger camera, which would have been perfect because it would have been small. And anyway,
it's got a nice little dead cat on top of it.
Yeah. I mean, I can do that on this one too. It's just so much bigger. So what I'm probably going to do is try to sell my Mark V A and,
you know,
maybe get the vlogger camera and just use this one for at home.
Are you using special lighting of any kind? Because the lighting's also really good.
Yeah. So I do have a couple of Elgato key lights, but right now
you can't get those anymore.
I know. I got really lucky. I was able to get both the Cam Link and the key lights before they were completely unavailable. So, but I'm actually right now, I don't even have them on. This is just Seattle.
Oh, it's just Seattle. Seattle has a softbox 9 days out of 10. Right?
Yep.
Also, why are we talking photography? We should introduce Ant Pruitt, our photographer, host of Hands On Photography. Hello, Ant. Good to see you.
Hello. Hello, Mr. Laporte. Hello, Miss Warren and Mr. Thompson.
Actually, Ant's using a pretty good camera for his video, too. You're using that camera you and I saw at CES in the... Mm-hmm.
Canon M200.
Were we actually at CES in January?
It was in January.
God, different world.
Go figure.
Remember when we traveled? Remember when we got on airplanes?
That was wild. Yeah, it's the M200 is really a good camera. And that is also, you can get the two things you need. One in which Christina was experiencing, which is the camera can stay on and doesn't turn itself off automatically. For what I do for that is we get these little dummy batteries that actually plug into a power supply.
Yeah, that's what I'm actually using with mine right now.
Yeah, because if it thinks it's a battery but it never stops, it's perfect. And then the other is you need clean HDMI out. And that's exactly what this M200 does. It's really good looking camera.
Just add some nice light into it. Yeah. Oh my goodness, it shines.
Are you going to review the ZV-1, the new vlogging camera for us?
I would love to, Sony.
Maybe I'll buy it. Maybe I'll just buy it, and that's for review purposes. Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's for review purposes.
Miss Laporte is listening, right?
Yeah. A couple of yes, damn it. Honey? Actually, what I like about this is it comes with this grip. So, I mean, they really mean serious when they say it's for vlogging because the grip, you don't hold the camera, you hold the grip, and then it has a button on it to shoot or to. I think that's a very cool. I guess I'll have to get that too. Or does it come?
I remember when that was announced, and I remember seeing Miss Warren's tweet.
Oh, you knew.
And she was very, very happy. I'll just say that.
Yep.
I always wanted to be a vlogger. Someday, maybe I'll be a vlogger. Or an influencer. Wouldn't that even be good? What are influencers doing in the COVID?
Showing off their houses. Money.
Yeah, they can't get outside. And then of course, you know, after George Floyd, you can't just be like, la-di-da, look how my swimming pool matches my tan. You have to, or whatever. You have to be serious. So it's got to be tough, I feel, for them, right? Tough for influencers.
Well, a lot of the influencer stuff started to come off as adult show and tell.
Yeah, phony. You know?
And I never really cared for that. There are some influencers out there that I highly respect because they are skilled and they don't just do it for the paycheck. They actually, you know, get paid on the things that they actually support. You know, it's not just show and tell.
In that respect, you're an influencer. Renee Ritchie's an influencer. That's
right.
Different. That's like a legit influencer. That's not, you know, Kim Kardashian. That's something different.
Yeah, but if someone paid me money to put a picture of this on my Instagram feed, it's just, I think people are getting tired of that really quickly. It's and about time, too, quite frankly.
In honor of the new register.com, I think this whole first section should be just from the Register today.
Oh, good grief. There's no pressure then. Thank you.
And the angels start to sing.
Actually, there's a couple of stories I just love. Like this guy, I have this General Electric refrigerator. It has a filter in it that requires it's a chip for copy protection. It's a copy protection chip.
They brought the printer BS to the fridge. Yes. I love it. I mean, I hate it. But
while you can get a physical filter that fits it for $13, the General Electric part is $50. That's so irritated some guy that he's created GaFiltergate.com.
Oh, nice. Oh, why not? You're going to have fun with it.
GeFiltergate.
Oh, I want to call it GaFiltergate. All right.
Okay.
I thought it was like GaFiltafish. GaFiltergate. So he's basically hacked it so that he it's awesome. He has a different, you can go through him instead of GE. And use your own third-party cheap filter instead of the special filter.
Well, I mean, this is going to become much more common because companies are, quite frankly, taking the piss. I mean, there's already a massive market in the farming community for 1970s and 80s farming equipment, which doesn't have all the proprietary software and the chips and the, you know, you don't have to get a dealer out to fix it. You can take a spanner and do it yourself. There's a great Twitter thread coming over the last 24 hours of a British hacker called Hacker Fantastic, and he's been looking at all the connected devices in his home. You know, he has an internet connected dishwasher. Now, I'm sorry, it can't stack itself. There's no point in turning it on, you know, unless you're there. So what is the point of that? It's just needless
I love the Samsung refrigerator with built-in browser, which they couldn't update.
Yes. which I predicted. It was so funny. When that was first announced at CES, I like wrote something. I was like, I love this fridge, but I would never buy it. And my whole point was, I was like, They're gonna stop supporting this in a couple of years, and you're gonna be left with a fridge that you can't update, that is useless, that is just a fridge that you have has all these other things that are not gonna work. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. And but what I love about this is just the ingenuity. Now, I haven't read the article closely enough, but I'm assuming, like, I don't know if he had to make any sort of hardware tweaks to his fridge.
Let's put it this way. It involved the use of a Dremel tool.
Okay, so that's too much. But I do love the ingenuity there, which is basically, because what concerns me about these fridges is not so much the $50 thing, right? Like, that's annoying, but okay. It's that at some point GE's going to either, and I think they might have already done this, like they're going to sell their business, it's going to go to somebody else, and like they're not going to support the filters anymore or the API that they use
so crazy.
To call out. The endpoint is going to be deprecated, and then you're not going to be able to replace the filter in your fridge. And it's like, okay, well, do I have to get a whole new fridge now because it doesn't work anymore? Just like HP did with the ink cartridges, and that's terrible. No.
This is the mismatch between durable goods like a refrigerator that lasts 10, 20 years, and the stuff we talk about, which lasts a year or two at best. It's what happened with Sonos. It's what happened with Wink. Now you have to pay a subscription for your Wink.
Well, Sonos, I can give them a pass to a certain extent because A, they're still going to support it as long as possible, and B, like it was going back like 15 years. So honestly, I'm not mad at Sonos. But I think there's a difference between buying like a Blu-ray player that I know in, you know, 4 or 5 years, the services that are on it aren't going to work anymore. Like my parents, I replaced their Roku that I got them years earlier with a Fire TV stick for Christmas. And their Roku had a Blockbuster button on it. But I expect the certain apps and certain things like that to stop working. And that's okay. Because as you said, it's durable versus, disposable. But a fridge, I don't expect I need to have an up-to-date API and endpoint connection so that it can verify the DRM chip on my filter so that, you know, my water is not gross. I mean, it's insanity.
I see stuff like this and I always question, like, what are the legal ramifications of this? I'm sure GE has bigger fish to fry and not necessarily thinking about coming after this person, but
they can't. In fact, the register specifically addresses this. Thank goodness in the U.S. you own the refrigerator, you can hack it.
That's still up for, I mean,
the right to repair issue is a larger issue.
Yeah, the right to repair issue is really kicking in. And it's one of the things that really grinds my gears, because if I spend, you know, $500 on a fridge, I expect to own the damn thing. I do not expect to be renting it with, you know, with the possibility of keeping food cold on occasion. It's just like, it's the same thing with, you know, a car or anything else. Same thing with music. I mean, do you remember when CDs first came out? Well, maybe not for younger, for you, yeah, but
I do.
When CDs first came out, it was like, buy to own for the rest of your life. And then you find out, actually, no, you bought it in that format. And if you rip it, you're breaking the law. And
I have bought Sergeant Pepper 12 times. Album, cassette, 8-track, CD, digital download, enhanced digital download, super remixed, enhanced digital download.
And the DMCA still knocked on your door.
And they still say, what's that pirated? So the register called Gay Gordon Byrne, executive director of the Repair Association. And Gay said that there's two things protecting you, hacking your refrigerator filter. The Copyright Office said software-enabled appliance repair is allowed. And the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act guarantees consumers can use parts not from the original manufacturer. You're actually protected. Because this is back when Congress actually did things that helped consumers. So you can. You're allowed to do it, at least in the United States.
I mean, the problem is they throw the DMCA in there a lot.
Right. You can't reverse engineer it.
Security researchers have found this a lot. Right. Yeah. If you reverse engineer something, you're technically under threat from DMCA.
Yeah.
And
hence why he used a Dremel tool. Because the fix is take your old filter, Dremel out the RFID chip, and tape it to the sensor. And then you can use any filter you want. So I don't think that violates reverse engineering, as far as I can
see. I would love to do that with my printer. And as Christina pointed out, you know, HP have been pulling this rubbish for years.
It's terrible.
And it's like making you throw away not quite empty cartridges.
But who's the coffee maker that does that? I don't know if
Keurig.
Is it
Keurig that does that? You can't use non-Keurig cartridges.
Well, people found a way to get around that because their, I guess, DRM, so to speak, was relatively easy to bypass. But yes, I mean, that's the whole thing. You need like a special, you know, chip of sorts to work with your Keurig. And HP, I mean, they've gone even further and they've been sued and they've had to backtrack. But I mean, they were at one point, I believe, like issuing software updates that would, you know, like brick your printer if you weren't part of some sort of subscription service or something. Where even if you were using HP ink, if you weren't part of some other thing, that the printer would be bricked. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. And I'm the type of person that I don't even buy the refills. Like I would never refill my own ink cartridge because that just says I'm going to get it all over myself.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the fact that you're saying, oh, we're going to put a chip on this and this is the only way you can use it is just draconian and terrible.
Right.
It's awful.
Yeah, right.
I swear at one point in time, when I was having to, you know, go get new printer ink, I would just go buy a new printer because it was cheaper.
It was literally, there's something wrong with a system where it's actually cheaper to buy the printer than buy new cartridges. But then they got wise to you, Ant.
They did.
They did the Ant modification. They just put a teaspoon of ink in the new ink, in the new cartridges, the printer cartridges. Just a little bit.
Starter cartridges.
Starter cartridges.
Cartridges.
You might as well start your way on your way to the office supply store now because you're going to need it. All right. That's a good start. Thank you, register.com. Theregister.com. Are you going to get rid of the at some point?
Oh, no, you can't do that.
No.
I mean, you've got to have some standards,
man. It's the register.
Get rid of the. It's cleaner.
This is actually another great story. It makes me very happy. If you use ZFS, which is a really good file system, unfortunately not widely used, even in Linux where it's available.
Thanks, Oracle.
Because it came from Sun. But the co-creator of OpenZFS, Matt Ahrens, submitted a GitHub pull request. I think this is so great, to the OpenZFS code database to remove unnecessary references to slavery. This is an example of, there's a lot of lip service played to Black Lives Matter, but I love it when somebody says, oh, well, let's do something about that, because master and slave is a part of the nomenclature in computers, hard drives, but also in ZFS, you have slave pools. And he says, let's eliminate The quote is, unnecessary references to slavery. The horrible effects of human slavery continue to impact society. No kidding. The casual use of the term slave in computer software is an unnecessary reference to a painful human experience. We're also seeing people remove whitelist and blacklist. And, you know, this is an example of unconscious racism. Black, bad.
Yeah.
White, yep. Good. Right?
Yep.
And you don't need it. You have a block list and an allow list. That is actually
simple as that.
Much better. Yep. It tells you what you're getting. Right? Now, Ian, you brought up black hat and white hat hackers. We've got to come up with something.
Well, yeah. I mean, we've got the black ones coming up in August, and I think they've got some fairly serious questions they need to ask themselves about where we're going with this. I mean, black hat, gray hat, white hat has been, you know, established for a long, long time. But as you say, it's unconscious racism. And we can find better terms. It's not outside the realms of possibility that we can't find another way to do this.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, block list and allow list is much better than blacklist and whitelist.
Right.
It's 100 times better. And frankly, primary drive and secondary drive is much better than master and slave. So I think that's possible. I don't know about black hat and white hat. Good guys and bad guys, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking good guys, bad guys, meh guys.
That's gray hat.
Meh guys.
I'm a meh guy. I don't know. Somewhere in the between. I like it.
On the photography side, I've seen a little bit of this happening with Studio Flash. You used to see Slave 1, Slave 2, if you're using multiple studio strobes in your shoot. Now I've noticed a lot of them are just saying S1, good. S2, or something like that.
It may seem trivial. It may seem like, oh, it's just a word. But I think if we can root out unconscious
racism, acknowledgement. I'm all for it. Freaking acknowledge it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, no, exactly. This is how things get, you know, it's baby steps at first, but we'll get there. You know, it's just constantly push, push, push.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been interesting that the Git community has been having the discussion too with, you know, there have been a lot of people who've been renaming their master branches on GitHub and other places, other repositories to main or to trunk or to something like that. And, you know, then there was, of course, what happens as, which is frustrating in these conversations, is that the pedants want to go into like the history of why was this term used
and could it mean something else?
And it's and it turned out actually with Git that it was, you know, inferred from BitKeeper, which was using master and slave in that way.
Yeah.
There is something to be said that, you know, the term mastery is different than, like, there are different contexts to use the word. Having said that, if someone's uncomfortable and if we can use a different word, and if it's going to help, you know, acknowledge, as Ant said, the many problems that we've had historically, I'm all for it. Yeah. Like,
and by the way, you might debate master, there's no debate about what the slave is.
No, there's not.
There's no there's alternate
not.
Use of the term slave. That's pretty clear. Yeah. So.
I mean, it's words matter. You know, this is how this stuff gets changed over time. And if you raise a generation of people on that language, then it does have a knock-on effect. So let's sort it out.
Progress also in face recognition. Very happy to see. IBM started saying, and I don't think it was a big cost to IBM. I don't know how big their face recognition business was. But they decided to withdraw from face recognition market because they were worried about profiling. And we all know the face recognition, I guess because of the data set it's fed, is very bad. It produces a lot of false positives among people of color because it's mostly trained on white folk.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft then followed, saying, we're not going to sell face recognition technology, we have it, to police until Congress passes a new privacy law. And this was the big one, Amazon, because Amazon has a program called Recognition with a K, might as well be three Ks, that is widely used by police. They say they're going to ban police using it for 1 year. And the hope is, I think, with all of these, that Congress will come in, step in and regulate it. You know, since 2008, Illinois has had strict controls on all kinds of biometrics. Appropriately, you have to notify if you're using it. You have to give people control of it. You have to give them the ability to delete it, much like GDPR. That's been 2008. That's been a long time. That's been the law. Mm-hmm. I think this is not a bad idea. And again, it gives me, we were talking before the show, I've seen a lot of movements in my many years, going back to the civil rights movement, and Martin Luther King, and it always seems one step forward, two steps back, one step forward, two steps back. For the first time ever, mm-hmm. I don't know about you, Amp, I see you have the sign your son made when you marched in the protests in Rohnert Park. Black Lives Matter, no justice, no peace. I like it that instead of N-O justice, N-O peace, he wrote K-N-O justice, K-N-O peace. That's kind of cool.
Even though he's the spawn of my loins, he's actually pretty smart.
was that Jacob or Isaac?
That was Jacob.
That's really great. That's really, hard really
head.
Awesome.
Youngest hard head.
Hard head. So what was I saying? I feel like there's hope. I don't know about you. And let me ask Ant, because you're the one who's got to bear the brunt mm-hmm. of this. You know, I was mm-hmm. the other day, Lisa and I went our rare outing, you know, we're gone cabin fever. And we went to this little bee farm in town, and they're open like one day a month. And we went and we got honey and stuff. It was really fun. They had lavender fields and stuff. And it was right after, I think it was right after George Floyd. And it was, mm-hmm. it hit me that this is an easy thing for us to do as white people. Go out, get in the car, go somewhere, be somewhere. But for you and your boys, and mm-hmm. I'm sure you're in Petaluma. Maybe it's not a huge calculus, but it's got to always be back of your brain. Is this a safe space? Is this somewhere I can go? Am I going to meet racism? Am I going to meet? Does that, I mean, that would be a constant low hum.
Yeah, unfortunately, sir, it is always in the back of my head. And I believe I've mentioned this here on the network before that when I get up to go do my morning walks at 6 a.m., I typically go out for, number one, stupid cardio. God, I hate cardio. But number two, I like to go shoot. I like to take my camera with me.
And you got to think twice about that.
So when I go out, I typically have on orange. And most people think the orange is because of my affinity towards Clemson football and so forth. It's not just that. It's so I can be seen. And I'd like to be seen off in a distance so I don't come off as surprising someone.
Are you reluctant to wear a mask?
No, because I don't want to get sick if I can help
it.
But I still wear orange T-shirts, orange sweatshirts. Yeah. I usually keep some type of bright color shirt in the trunk of my car because I never know if I'm going down the road and something gets my attention. I'd like to take a photograph. I'll get out the car, put on my bright colors, and I'll go walk, do
but
what I do.
Again, for my I'm own sad protection. That you have to think of that constantly.
Yeah,
it's sad. Well,
And one day it'll change. One point, I've not been optimistic about it.
Yeah.
But I'm getting a little more optimistic based on the things that I've seen here the last 2 weeks. Just as you said, it seems like there's a movement happening now.
It's encouraging because it feels like more people, especially more of us white folks, are starting to get it.
Right. It's an amplification of the message that I've said and other people of color have tried to say for decades, and it's great.
Yeah.
You know, now this still doesn't diminish the fact that there's still some other issues inside of black community in particular. You know, yes, police are still on the hook for all of these heinous crimes that they've done towards people of color. But black folks, I'm talking to you right now that are listening, we still got to do better as a community ourselves and stop with the black on black crime, too. No one tends to mention that.
Yeah.
No
one's perfect.
Nope.
It has very little to do with the color of your skin. That's the whole point. You know, underneath that skin, we're exactly the same. Well, you have mm-hmm. more muscles than I do, but that's that's something you worked on.
Yes.
But it is remarkable how quickly these things change, because it was my birthday on Friday, and I'm a grumpy sod on my birthday. I always have been. I hate it. But I found out that June 12th is Loving Day, which in 1967 was the Supreme Court ruling that said
the loving
interracial
couple.
Marriage.
Yes.
Yeah. Interracial marriage was now legal in the U.S. I had no idea that it wasn't legal anymore.
There's a great documentary on the Lovings. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not that long ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's barely 50 years ago, and already the very idea that that should be a ban is ridiculous. And hopefully it'll be less than 50 years, but we can shift on to a point where, you know, the current culture wars or whatever, you know, we're just they're a relic of history. You know, racism, sexism, homophobia, we can get past that. I really hope so, but hopefully it's not going to take another 50 years. But
these are the Lovings. They were arrested in Virginia in 1958. Virginia had the Racial Integrity Act of 1924, which made miscegenation a crime. Police raided their home, and they took it, thank goodness, they took it all the way to the Supreme Court and won.
That's awesome.
And, you know, geez,
love, man. It's all about love.
I love it that they're named the Lovings. It couldn't be better. You know?
That's awesome.
So it's Loving Day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
sorry.
Go ahead, Mr. Thompson.
Oh, I was just coming back to the facial recognition thing.
Me too.
As is expected of me, I'm slightly cynical about this whole thing because Amazon said, yeah, we're not going to use cell recognition to the police. They didn't mention any other, and we asked them about this. They didn't block out selling it to any other federal agency. Oh. Like CBP or the DOD. Microsoft said, well, you know, we're not going to sell it until there's a law passed. It's like, but we weren't actually selling it to them in the first place, and our system isn't that good. And IBM qualified their statement in such terms that they could, you know, there's enough loopholes in there to drive a truck through. So it's a good step, but let's not get taken in by the PR washing, because they've left themselves plenty of wiggle room.
No, agreed. And I think I was just going to say the one thing I think that is important to think about, too, is that, look, I think all the major companies, including disclosure of the company that I work for, although I don't know anything about the stuff that they make, I think it's important that they stand up and say we're not going to be doing this. But we also have to think about, we do need legislation, because what about all the companies out there that, like Palantir and whatnot, that have no problem, you know, selling to different organizations? Just because the big players are not doing it doesn't mean that the technology, which may be good and may be bad, and in some cases when it's bad, it can be even more harmful, won't still be sold and still be available to these organizations.
Yeah, Palantir really worries me, because ethically, you know, they've got all the self-control of a Labrador presented with an unguarded roast chicken. I mean, they will take that data, grab it, use it, stuff it, and sell it. You know, they have, it seems, a company with very few ethics at all. And, you know, yeah, it's nice that the big players are staying out of it, but someone's going to sell this stuff.
It's going to be interesting, because Palantir's planning an IPO in the fall. And that'll be the first time anybody can look beneath the curtain, behind the curtain, at what these guys are up to. For a long time, it was just a mysterious thing. There's also, let's point out, Clearview AI, which is maybe...
scumbags.
Okay, that's one way to put it, yeah. they were scraping face recognition information from Facebook and Instagram because, of course, a lot of people are posting pictures of people, not even of themselves, and tagging them. And Clearview AI was able to build a massive database of people's pictures matched with their name, and they've been selling that to police. And they've always been a little bit sketch. There's a really good NPR, maybe it was The Daily. I think it was The Daily from the New York Times did a story about trying to track down the founder and what exactly they were up to. And in fact, one of the things that happened in this story is that the reporter offered her picture to a police officer who had the Clearview AI account.
I remember that story.
And she didn't show up. But everybody else does. She didn't show up. So she finally gets a hold of the Clearview AI founder and CEO and asks him. She said, are you blocking press people from your database? He said, that was a bug. That was a bug. And she started showing up.
Now it is.
That was a bug.
A bug or a feature, right?
Yeah. If you're interested in what Clearview AI is all about, that daily episode from a few weeks back is very eye-opening.
Well, I mean, they're getting sued by the social media people at the moment. But it comes back to, there's that famous quote from Mark Zuckerberg. It was just like, they're giving me all this personal information, the idiots. You know, I mean, that's
the idiots. That's the kind of thing. He said that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he said that. Yeah. And he's honestly, it's just I can see it from his perspective. It's amoral as all hell, but you know, I can see why he's happy about it.
I'm just glad that we're all wearing masks. Face recognition isn't going to work all that well. Although I'm sure they're all working on ways to do it from just your eyes and forehead. And we should point out there are some good uses for face recognition, right? It's not all bad.
Right. We talked about it on This Week in Google the other day. If you haven't checked that out, go to twit.tv/twig and check that out.
So he's better at this than I am, I tell you.
Yeah, you're good, man.
we talked a little bit about it, and I said that we need to have more people at the table when it comes to developing this technology. And I don't want people to confuse it with saying, hey, get more black people in there and get more people
of
color.
Yeah, that doesn't solve it. Yeah.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying we need different perspectives in there. If you're someone, this may be a bad example, but if you're someone that loves the band, I don't know, Pearl Jam or whatever, you're going to tend to hang out with other people that like that same band or what and whatnot. And when you go to talk about music, all you talk about is Pearl Jam. When there's a vast, vast library of other musicians and other types of music out there. So you should have some other perspectives come in and say, hey, you might want to check out, heck, I don't know, MC Hammer. I don't know.
MC Hammer?
Something, you know, but it gives you another perspective is all I'm saying.
Yes. And just broaden because your, well, that's why we want women. That's why we want blacks. That's why we want Hispanics, Asians. We want diversity. You can't. And the problem is Silicon Valley is essentially a monoculture.
It is.
And of course these problems are going to crop up when it's a bunch of white bros doing this stuff.
You know, and it's not going to be easy to get all of those people, different types of people at the table when it's time to talk about these technologies. But there still has to be an effort there if you really want to make this work and not have it pull up an image of me and label it as it did on air as a wrongdoer.
Enough teen spirit. We want Too Legit to Quit.
Yeah, there you go. Show title.
But it was interesting, though, because they fed members of the House of Representatives through one of these systems.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
And identified a large number of black representatives as criminals. And you're kind of like, yeah, your data, it's garbage in, garbage out. You know, your data set is not good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this, and in a way, I think this is quite handy. I mean, from Microsoft's perspective, Brad Smith has always been very clear on this. He wants a legal situation set down so they know what parameters they're working in so they don't get sued to hell and back. But I think for people like IBM and from Microsoft and to an extent Amazon, taking a year off from selling this, that gives them a lot of time for product development so they can get this really spiffy again and then they can sell it for large cash.
As long as you guys are putting it on hold, we could too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Yeah. When an idea like Black Lives Matter starts to take hold in the country, companies are going to cynically step up. And we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago. I think it was Dylan Tweeney who said this. I like what Satya Nadella said. He said, it's our company. We're going to fix
it. Wesley Faulkner.
It was Wesley. You're right. Thank you. You watch the show. See, he watches the shows.
I'm a fan. Before I was an employee of Twit, I was a fan of Twit.
You remember better than I do, and I was there. So, yeah, Wesley said that. He said, what Satya said because CEO of Microsoft said, look, we take responsibility and we're going to fix it in our company. Instead of, you know, Black Lives Matter. No, we're gonna fix it. We take this seriously. So that's what you got to look for in these companies. It's not lip service, but actual action. You know, get some black people on the board. I loved it that Reddit replaced Alexis Ohanian.
Yeah,
he stepped down.
That was a great step.
And by the way, the woman that put in his place is excellent. I can't remember who it is, but at the time I read her bio. It's a woman, I think, right? Oh, now I have to.
No, it's I believe it's guy, it's
Y something. What was his name?
Yeah, it's.
We can look this up. Yeah. We have the tech. Michael Siebel.
We had the technology.
Michael Siebel, of course. I'm sorry. I apologize.
He ran
Michael.
Y something.
Y Combinator. No. He's the CEO of Y Combinator. He's actually.
No, but he was from Justin TV and
he started Justin
Twitch.
TV. I knew him back then in the day when I Justine.
Yeah, I was going to say that's how I met him. Yeah. Met him Justin. when it was Justin TV before it became Twitch.
Yeah. Remember Justin had the backpack and he had a camera on him all the time.
Sure do.
Yeah. So Michael's a cool, really cool guy. And he's actually very well respected in Silicon Valley. So good replacement for Alexis, who was also respected. He doesn't need the money. And I think that was a good thing for him to do, step down and say, you know what, we need a black member on this board.
Well, I'm saying he was putting his money where his mouth is because he also donated $1 million to the cause. And when you get Facebook of all people, well, we're putting $10 million in. It's like, really? That's what?
Out of
10
what?
Minutes of 10 minutes yeah. profit?
Out of yeah. billions.
What a great gesture. Yeah. You know? It's like, it's like me chucking a penny and cutting it in half first.
Reddit's a really important example because Reddit can be a cesspool. There's good and bad on Reddit. I love Reddit, but I am very careful about what subreddits I follow.
I'm proudly banned from the Donalds. So.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So that's actually quite a challenging job Michael's going to have.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's hard. You know, free speech is important, too. But and you don't want Reddit to become 4chan. So you really got a tough balance. I like Reddit a lot, though. And I'm glad that I love Alexis. And I think he did exactly
right
there.
It's not just Reddit. I mean, the Intel news this week that Jim Keller had decided to take another job from his chip design work with Chipzilla. You know, Jim always shifts around a lot. But it was interesting when I was going through the story that, yes, he was left. And of the four people that were moved in the reshuffle, three of them weren't white Americans. It was all immigrants coming in. So, I mean, there are this move. It's growing slowly.
Yeah.
You know, the old thing that you have to be an old white guy to lead a tech company isn't the case anymore. I mean, look at Microsoft, look at Google, look at now, you know, it's not going to be too long before the rest of the industry catches up.
To some degree, I think this is part of the reason we're going through this in America right now. California is no longer a majority white state. Whites are in a minority in California, and that's gradually happening across the country. And I think some of this, the paroxysm we're going through and this kind of comes from a fear that us white guys are losing our position, that we're becoming a minority. And I think it's important to reassure old white men like me, look, your privilege isn't going to disappear completely, but it's nice to share a little bit.
Well, but also, I mean, and I push back a little bit on, I mean, I know that technically it's like, okay, whites aren't the majority, but if you're, it's still like 40%.
No,
so if you were to take all the different, the other groups, like, you know, it's hard to find another one that has that, like a higher percentage than 40%. Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even that framing, I think, it is oftentimes, you know, a bait to make old white guys feel uncomfortable and feel disenfranchised when they're not disenfranchised and haven't been disenfranchised and won't be disenfranchised even if you know they're the number were to fall even more
and like, honestly,
that's not what it's about.
If that's what happens, it couldn't happen to a better bunch of people. I think it's time to practice a little humility from now. And but that's why Virginia had a law against interracial marriage. They didn't want to muddy the waters, so to speak. They didn't want a lot of little brown babies running around. Oh my God, what's going to happen? And we can reassure the Steve Millers of the world, the David Dukes of the world, there'll still be white people. Maybe not sitting on top of all the other people.
Well, I mean, the late great British comedian Jeremy Hardy had a lovely phrase on this, which was just like, people bemoan what it was like before, you know, the Asians and the Vietnamese and the blacks came to Britain. It's like, what was it like? You know, you went out on a Friday night in the pub and what you had left? The scone shop. Now you've got curries.
The Indian food in London is phenomenal. It's the best food in London.
The national dish of the UK in terms of popularity is chicken tikka masala, which was invented in Glasgow, admittedly by Indians. But, you know, I mean, it just... Yeah. We gained an awful lot out of it. I don't get that.
Go to Tokyo. There's a curry shop on every corner.
Oh,
yeah.
That's marvelous. Yeah,
it's wonderful.
But I mean, it's kind of like when I first came to America, I was fed a Thanksgiving dinner with sweet potato and marshmallow mixed. It was the foulest thing I ever come across. Give me some rice and pea any day.
You know? Oh, boy. Yeah, you and I are going to have to hook up, Mr. Thompson. I'm going to have to cook for you.
My smoker now comes on Wednesday. You got to come over and we got to smoke
break
some
it in for you.
Break it in for me. All right, well, that was our register.com, theregister.com segment. I'm not blowing smoky, and it is the Register has always been a great publication, and it's only getting better. And I have to think some of that has to do with the fact that you're the news editor. Really stellar work. Thank you.
Honestly, I've only been there for, oh my God, 9 years. I'm an old
jeez.
Seasoned veteran.
But, you know, the Register's been around for 25 years, and it was set up as a technology tabloid, bring tabloid headlines.
Yeah, I love
still
that.
Keep good stuff in the copy. But, you know, honestly, the IT industry is ripe for taking the piss out of
it. Needs
so
it.
Why not?
Yes, you need it. Yes. What is your favorite Register headline?
It's probably a bit rude to say on air. We did manage to get it through.
Say it.
Okay. Well, it was when there was the... It was when Dick Costello left as CEO of Twitter, and gave it to Jack. So it was Big Dick pulls out, Jack's off to the hot seat. That unfortunately got pulled about 24 hours later because the complaints were huge. It was worth doing.
And if you have to explain that to the kids, don't. Please don't.
That's peak Elridge. Oh, my
gosh.
That's so good.
Oh, gosh. That's gold.
Somebody asked me the other day, why do you guys always call Google the chocolate factory?
Oh, that's... well, Google hate it. I mean...
That's reason enough.
No. I mean, the reason we do it is because... the same reason we refer to Microsoft as Redmond or Intel as Chipzilla or Cisco as Switchzilla is that you can't have the same word twice in a sentence.
It's just bad.
So when they're calling themselves Google Cloud, we can't then put Google in the same sentence. The reason we call them the Chocolate Factory was a reference to Willy Wonka because they were developing all these marvelous things. They didn't tell you about them, and then they came out with them. You know, I mean, you remember when Gmail came out? It came out on April the 1st, and people weren't entirely sure it wasn't a joke.
I thought it was a joke. Yes.
Yeah. So we started
in college. I was like, what?
But I mean, we started calling them the Chocolate Factory, and they hate it. I've had a PR say to me, if we could convince you to stop calling us
that's awesome.
My career would be made.
Oh, that's awesome.
It. And they're just like, for goodness sake, grow up. Probably you're a multi-billion-dollar company.
I would embrace it.
Like, making that call basically just ensure that they will be the Chocolate Factory.
Forever.
Yeah, for the entire time.
No, but it's a compliment. I mean, Willy Wonka was a fantastic character. Ignore the films, read the books, read The Chocolate Factory and The Great Glass Elevator. Willy Wonka, flawed though he was a fantastic person.
Just like any other large company, it's flawed.
I mean, he tortured small children, but they deserved it.
They always deserved it.
They absolutely deserved it. My favorite books of all time. It's difficult because Roald Dahl is very problematic, but Willy Wonka and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, rather, is one of my favorite books.
Oh, isn't it a great
book? History.
I read it to the kids. James and the Giant Peach. I loved his stuff.
Matilda. My mom read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory to my sister when she was pregnant with me. And there's obviously no way to prove this, but I have a feeling that that's why, like from the time I was little, like that book and the movie, the one from 1970 were always, you know, my favorites.
All right.
And let's not forget, he also wrote The Twits.
One of his lesser known
books, but yep. Yeah.
I would recommend his adult stuff, to be honest. It's slightly filthy, but it's very amusing in its way.
Really?
He wrote a number of sort of books of short stories. I think Switch Bitch was one of them and various others.
Oh, my.
But fascinating bloke. Yes, problematic, as you say, in that, you know, originally the Oompa Loompas were pygmies, and then the publishers were just like, mate, not really a good idea. This is 1960. We're a bit more woke than that now. Yeah. He had an interesting life. He served in the Second World War, seducing American women for the cause of peace. So
God bless him.
No, No, he was sent over here as a spy to basically to support, to get American support for carrying on the war against Germany. Ah. And apparently slept with the wife of Henry Luce, I think it was, in order to enlist her support. And he wrote a fantastic memo to his embassy. It's just like, I'm utterly exhausted. I cannot do this anymore. And it was just like, for Britain, roll.
If you'd ever seen a picture of Clara Booth Luce, you would know why. This is the Twits. Mr. Twit hates his wife. Mrs. Twit detests her husband. The repulsive pair like nothing more than playing wicked tricks on one another. Sooner or later, things are going to go too far. Okay? Okay?
His granddaughter, Sophie Dahl, tells a story that she'd been he'd been telling them a story about someone who speaks dreams into someone's ear. And they went to bed, and then there was a sound outside of a ladder going up, and he was there with a speech trumpet trying to speak through the window at them until his wife told him to get down before he broke his neck. But, yeah, interesting chap.
as Christina points out, an anti-Semite. It's problematic. Apple, Gone with the Wind is an example. A movie made in 1939, and it's a racist movie, let's face it, as much of the world... Certainly America
was just a reflection of the world.
HBO Max decided to yank it, not to put it on HBO Max. They say they're going to bring it back. And I think this is a good solution with additional material explaining the time and so forth. But I noticed on my, and maybe that's just me, but on my Apple TV, all of a sudden Gone with the Wind is the number one download.
Yeah.
Yours
which
too?
Is, which, yeah, I've seen that too. And which makes me sad because the film is incredibly flawed. The book that it was based on is incredibly flawed. I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, where we used to go to the Margaret Mitchell House for school field trips. And my issue with the film, I mean, it's sort of an interesting film in that it was directed by people who were not part of the South. The actors were all British,
right?
Which was sort of funny in and of itself because it became to me the film's. What's problematic about the film, there are lots of things, but it's more that it created, I believe, this hagiography of what the South was like,
beautiful
which was not
South,
accurate.
The grand old and South.
It created this illusion for a lot of people, especially a lot of white people who live in the South, that they could tell themselves, oh, this is what it was like.
That's right.
And things weren't that bad for slaves. And this has been overblown. And I think that's the problem of the film. Having said that, it is you can't not make the argument. There's not an argument that anyone can intellectually make that it is not one of the most important films of all time, and that it's not one of the most influential. And if you look at, like, especially the first, 20 years of cinema, 30 years of cinema, it is one of the most important and is frankly probably had more of an impact than almost any other type of, there are maybe five films, and it's definitely in the top five, probably in the top three, that have had the greatest impact on not just the future of the film industry, but of, on television and on other mediums too. So it's one of those where I love that they're going to add context because they need to add the context and they need to talk about the problems with it. But it's also one of those where you can't pretend like Gone with the Wind never happened because all of its flaws.
Same thing with Roald Dahl. Same thing with Henry Ford. Same thing with Winston Churchill. Excuse it, but you have to view it in context, right?
It makes me think there was a spike in the downloads because of the generation that just don't really know anything about it. So curious.
It really bugged me. It really bugged me to see that as the number one most viewed movie on Apple TV. It's like, God.
And I hope that it's that. I hope that it's that.
Just curiosity.
Curiosity. My fear is that it is
a vote.
This impulse to say, it's banned and it's not banned. It's just not on a streaming service for free for a few weeks. And that people, as part of their what they see as a reflex to overly PC culture, when that's not what this is, or to say, I'm going to give Warner Brothers my $10 anyway. It's like, if the conversation were truly to say this is not going to be available on streaming, I think that's a broader conversation to have. The conversation saying right now, maybe when this service is launched, maybe let's not have this and let's bring it back with proper context. I think that is. is a very fair thing to have, because the film has had such an impact on so many things, and we need to talk about that. But I, at the same time, I would not be in favor of people saying this film can't exist and can't, you know, be viewed, because I'm, for better or worse, pretty close to a free speech absolutist, and this is our history, and we need to own our history. We need to own the good parts. Mm-hmm.
That's the trick, mm-hmm. right? To see it as a historical document.
Right? Tell it.
Yeah. Yep. And not necessarily something to be proud of.
I mean, we've had this thing in the UK this week because I don't know if you've ever seen Fawlty Towers. Yeah. The Don't Mention the War Germans episode. Now, that was pulled briefly. And everyone's like, oh, it's political correctness gone mad. You know, why should we bother offending the Germans? It wasn't pulled because of the German references. It was pulled because one of the characters uses the N-word a hell of a lot in that episode.
Oh, Lord.
Okay. And honestly, I think it's now been reinstated, but honestly, I'm with you on this. We should own this stuff. You know, we should say, this is what it was like. This is why it was wrong. This is why we know it's wrong.
And this is why we're going to change it. Now. We're fixing it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We're moving forward.
Yes.
We're going to move forward. We're not going to stay in this same period and same area with the same type of mentality. We're going to move forward with bigger and better ideas on this stuff.
Yeah. Wow, this was this register segment. This is a good thing. We're going to do more of that.
I do like to add that I still think the Carol Burnett show version of Gone with the Wind is better.
I agree. And I think that is actually one of the best pieces of satire. Like, that's, if you've never seen it, you should Google it's oh my God, it's amazing.
So it was like Carol Burnett.
Man. Yeah, Carol Burnett.
It was a comedy version of Gone with the Wind. It was called Gone with the Breeze.
Yeah, something like that. The most famous thing is Where's the Curtain?
Yeah.
Yes.
Where's the curtain rod?
Yes, very famously, because made from the curtain. Because that Scarlett O'Hara's dress was made from a curtain because she couldn't, because of the war. Gone with the Wind, or Went with the Wind. All right. So it is, I think it is on, yes, it is. It's on.
There's the curtain.
It's on YouTube. Yeah. So probably illegally, and I won't show it, but you could find it on YouTube.
It
I will
awesome.
Be watching it. Secretly, I'll draw the blinds, lock the door.
While we're talking wind, one of the Twit people in the chat room has mentioned A Mighty Wind, which is an absolutely fantastic film.
I highly recommend you
watch that.
But that's not about slavery in the antebellum South.
No, true.
About folk singers. But it's
folk singers, you know, they have their problems too.
Our show, I love you guys. It's Ian Thompson from theregister.com. It's Christina Warren from Microsoft.com. They're not changing their URL, I don't think. And it's Ant Pruitt from twit.tv, the host of Hands on Photography. So great to have all three of you. This is too much fun. I shouldn't get paid. No paycheck today, Lisa. I said that.
Yeah, too late.
I was going to say, she's just like, nailed it.
Oops, how am I going to get my vlogger camera?
She don't play.
Yeah, I know. Probably getting a Slack right now. Okay. Our show today brought to you by Zendesk. You know the name Zendesk. This is one of the best. It's a service-first CRM company, builds software designed to improve customer relationships. That's what CRM means, customer relationship management. We know things are a little weird right now, but the thing you don't want to forget, whatever situation your business is in, is your customers. It's important to maintain that relationship. And Zendesk is here to help. They're offering, this is fantastic, a 6-month free remote support bundle. Complimentary remote support bundle comes with the essential tools your team needs to stay agile, to keep connected with customers, even when your team is at home. And that means you can use email, phone, chat, community forums. You can have a help center. You can do social media. It takes so little time to get it up and running. I mean, I'm talking hours, not weeks. Because Zendesk is so well designed. It was built with a simple idea: make customer service software that's easy to use and accessible to everyone with a single dynamic help desk interface. Your team will love it, and most importantly, your customers will love it. Let them know you still are there. You still care about them. You can implement Zendesk quickly. It's flexible, so it'll meet whatever your needs are. It works right out of the box. That's simple. But as you get used to it, as you use it, you can configure it to match your preferences. There's apps you can add. There's kind of a huge number of integrations that work. Zendesk is used by everybody from large enterprises to startups because as you get bigger, Zendesk gets bigger with you. It scales with your growth so that no matter what size your company, innovative customer experiences are always within reach. No matter the size, the industry, or your ambition, your goals. Let's keep customers first. Let's go to Zendesk.com/twit. 150,000 customers across hundreds of industries, 30 languages. Look, the customer journey differs for everybody. No matter what your business needs, Zendesk products can help pave the path that's best for your organization. Go to Zendesk, Z-E-N-D-E-S-K, Zendesk.com/twit. I think this is really awesome. Perfect timing for this, a six-month free remote support bundle. That is kind of amazing. Thank you, Zendesk, for offering that. The timing is really good. Let your customers know, yeah, we're still here. We still care about you. How are you doing? How are you doing right now? We're here for you. Zendesk.com/twit. Really happy to welcome Zendesk to our Twit family. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Moving right along. So you may remember, we even talked about it, the president, happy birthday, Donald, by the way, the president's executive order saying, screw Twitter. I believe that was in the preamble. Screw Twitter. the hell with you, you evil.
That sounds more like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now the four senators have written a letter to the FCC. I presume they're serious. Asking the FCC to act. We kind of mocked the executive order as being kind of meaningless. On the other hand, if Congress gets behind it and the FCC gets behind it, it becomes a little more meaningful. It's really all about removing Section 230 protection. This is something that keeps coming up, the Earn It Act. Section 230, there's even a book about it that says, what was it, like the 33 words that created the internet. It's vital. It's a vital part of the Communications Decency Act that lets Twitter exist, that lets Facebook exist, that lets my blog comments exist, that lets our chat room exist. And it gives us the right to censor bad comments, remove inappropriate trolling, that kind of thing, without suddenly becoming a publisher, it's a safe harbor, without suddenly having the full responsibility of a publisher. It's a sensible way to handle this. And it was actually created by Congress so that the internet could continue and exist. Marco Rubio, Kelly Loeffler, Kevin Cramer, and Josh Hawley wrote a letter to the FCC asking them to review Section 230 and, quote, clearly define the criteria for which companies can receive protections under the statute. And this is the argument coming from conservatives. Social media companies have become involved in a range of editorial and promotional activity, like publishers. They monetize, edit, and otherwise editorialize user content. It's time to take a fresh look at Section 230 and interpret the vague standard of good faith with specific guidelines and directions. You agree?
I'm torn on this one, I've got to say. This is an unpopular opinion, but I think with companies that are large enough, they have a duty to moderate their own content. I mean, at The Reg, we moderate our forums fairly strictly. And I was at the press conference where Mark Zuckerberg said, we want to be the newspaper for the world, you know, in the morning. We want to have the publisher's responsibility to check what stuff they put up there is accurate. Now, so it's a really fine line. I support Section 230. I'm a free speech advocate. But I think some companies are taking the piss when it comes to this. And there needs to be some kind of balance. Maybe a size limit on companies that have to actually moderate their own content. An unpopular opinion, I know, but such is life.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there has... I agree that it would be nice to have a balance. It was interesting. So on my podcast, Rocket, this week, we had Catherine Turner-Costa, who's a policy analyst at the EFF, on. And she and I are also longtime friends. And we were talking about Section 230. And actually, there was kind of an interesting debate between her and Brianna Wu. And she made an interesting point, which was, you know, if we were to create the internet today, maybe we would make different decisions. And maybe there would be things that maybe we wouldn't have Section 230. Maybe we wouldn't have, you know, a 520 from the DMCA. But we do have the internet that we have. And by making changes to 230, it's nice to kind of look and say, okay, they would affect companies of a certain size. But the reality is as we've seen with, you know, SESTA and some of the other, you know, frankly, like, you know, legislation, which has done more to hurt the people that it was hoping to protect. What you risk, I think, is that you risk only the companies that could afford to do their own moderation are then the only companies that would be able to exist. So you know, that would be my fear, would be to say, okay, if you have to be of a certain size to do this, that it would somehow become twisted in such a way that, you know, mm-hmm. only the big companies would be able to exist and that smaller places wouldn't. And that would be my fear with implementing regulations that way.
The irony of this is that this was part of the Communications Decency Act, which has since been struck down, the rest of it struck down by the Supreme Court, which was basically an act to censor the internet. And some wiser minds in Congress, including Ron Wyden, added this Section 230 to protect online right. sites so that they wouldn't, that they'd have the right to remove bad stuff without suddenly losing their protection, their safe harbor protection as a publisher. So I think it's often misunderstood. But the EFF, as you point out, says it's the most important law protecting internet speech. It actually protects internet speech at this point. And in fact, Trump's executive order might have exactly the opposite effect, forcing Twitter to start taking down his tweets, which would be
ironic.
Yeah, that's not his intent. His contention is that they're already taking down conservative tweets. And he didn't like it. Mostly it was because he didn't like it that they commented on his tweets about email right. voting.
Right. He's mad that he feels like he's a target, not realizing that if it becomes that the safe harbor goes away and it becomes a liability, that way more of his speech and the speech of the people that he supports would become a liability for Twitter. And the problem with that, though, is that, okay, so Facebook and YouTube and Twitter might have enough money to fight some of these things, but smaller sites wouldn't, right. you know, like, right. and that, I think that becomes a really big issue to think about, okay, well, what happens there? And also basically ruins a lot of what has made the internet for better or for worse. And I think it's fair to have a discussion that it's not all good.
I wouldn't have comments. I wouldn't have comments on my blog if it weren't for Section 230. It'd be too risky.
Right. Yeah.
under the law, we probably
wouldn't have IRC chat, right? Like there would be no reason to have that.
We couldn't do IRC. Honestly, yes, YouTube has a lot of resources, but with hundreds of hours of content uploaded every right. minute, no company is big enough to review right. everything. Yeah. So YouTube wouldn't exist.
No, YouTube would get rid of comments. They would get rid of comments and they would probably go to a method where you would have to apply to get an account to upload.
Yeah, it'd be like China. You'd have to have a permit.
Right.
Mm. It's exactly what you don't want. The other thing that you don't want is the FCC to start regulating Facebook and Google and Twitter. That's not their role. That's not their job. The FCC regulates television and radio broadcast.
Well, also, the FCC, quite frankly, is about as effective as a lace condom when it comes to regulation. So the idea that they're going to rule over all internet speech is horrifying. I mean, they are totally incompetent. So, you know, I mean, just seriously, there is the whole free speech. What I dislike about the Section 230 things is now being used as a club to try and intimidate certain tech companies.
That's really the purpose. Yeah.
Mark Zuckerberg basically just rolled over and said, please don't hurt me. Twitter said, to hell with you. It's going to be very interesting to see how the other major players work on this.
My problem is I oversimplify a lot of this stuff and don't tend to think about it from the aspect of a big, big company and just think about it as, you know, what would Ant Pruitt do if this was his world kind of thing? And I totally get where Mr. Thompson's coming from, but there definitely has to be some sort of a balancing act in here.
I mean, it's really tricky because, you know, great, you know, cheap laws make, you know, so good laws make bad examples sometimes. But it's absolutely vital that you can put stuff online and not be, you know, and not be legally liable for it. But I do feel that some companies are taking the piss on this one. And maybe, you know, if you're worth more than $10 billion, yeah, you should be able to put some of that money into moderating your comments. Part of me would just be like, no comments on YouTube? Great, fewer racists around.
Yeah, I don't mind no comments on YouTube, but it would still also cause problems with uploading on YouTube.
I found stuff on YouTube in the comments section. I found, you know, new artists which I hadn't come across through reading comments. So, I mean, there's possibly...
This is the problem with the whole gosh darn internet. It's just... It's bad
Why
and good.
Why can't people just be nice?
It's too complicated. Yeah. I mean, on the one hand, I almost feel like I'm with you, Christina, kind of free speech above all else. And I feel like Facebook should just say it shouldn't weigh in at all and let anything be up there. Of course, it does, but with its news feed, it does weigh in because it algorithmically selects what you see.
Yeah, and see, this is my problem with things like Facebook and to a certain degree, Twitter. If you want to take the position that, you know, unless it violates the law, you can post it, I think that you can have an argument to do that. Where I have a problem with Facebook in particular is that they elevate and give more, they give more publicity and they give more weight to stuff that gets the most interaction. And that's what a recent Wall Street Journal, investigation showed, is that they are all about the engagement and all about how much people are consuming and clicking, and they're reinforcing people's ideas. And to me, that is not free speech, right? Like, you can say, all right, you have the right to post this, but Facebook is not obligated to show that to more and more people because it gets the outrage clicks or it does other things.
So my thinking is, if we turned off the recommendation engines on YouTube, if we turned off the algorithms in the feed on Facebook, could we then have free speech? The other thing I would do probably on Facebook is ban political ads. I ban all ads, because ads are where you really have problems on Facebook. That's not the algorithm. That's even worse than the algorithm. That's people using personal information to get to you. So that's problematic, because Facebook would have to operate for free.
I believe there's a story about that.
Is it?
I believe there's a story about that in our rundown.
Find that story. We'll talk about it. Let's take a break. And we'll talk about it. We have this, as you know, Ann, we have this conversation on Twig all the time, and I don't know what the right answer is. I think the algorithm is part of the problem. Facebook, what if Facebook were just a bulletin board where people could post whatever they want?
You know, but see, even though I am not a Facebook fan, I do get the premise of giving people what they want when it comes to content. If I am a fan of some particular sports team or whatever,
give you more Clemson Tigers stuff. Yeah.
Let me see that, because it's going to be right up my alley. I'm going to click on that, and Facebook can leverage that information with advertisers. I get it. That makes business sense, but there's always a dark side to that, unfortunately. Yeah.
It's the problem is, it's very, very profitable to build reinforcing chambers of sort of the, you know, if you can get people all, you know, worked up about the same thing, it turns out it's really profitable from an advertising perspective. But I mean, back in until 1987 in the US, you had the Fairness Doctrine, which was, if you were a broadcast media, you had to show both sides of the argument. And Reagan got rid of that, and now we've got talk radio, we've got, you know, a whole bunch of media outlets, which are basically propaganda for one side or the other. I would like to see the Fairness Doctrine reintroduced. You can't put it on the internet, but I mean, we're publishers. We are legally responsible for what we publish. And Section 230 helps us on the forums, but as journalists,
doesn't protect if we publish you against something and it's, your articles. Yeah, yeah.
Right. No, and Britain's got the toughest libel laws in the world, so we are, you know,
which is
and
funny,
we will always
because there's more yellow journalism coming out of Britain than any other country in the world.
Well, yeah, because you learn how to play the game.
Ah.
You know, what can you actually say that's libelous? What can you say that isn't libelous, but which gets the same point across?
The
CNN
had a great documentary on the National Enquirer, which is the original tabloid in the U.S., and the original publisher hired a lot of British journalists and editors because you guys were so good at coming up with snarky articles about celebrities. And
I mean, not to blow my own trumpet, but I mean, the Brits do have a good reputation from journalists for journalism. I mean, it's the old adage is you cannot hope to. What's the phrase? You cannot hope to buy or twist the honest British journalist, but seeing what the man will do untwisted, there's no reason to. I mean, there are if you look at things like The Sun and The Mirror, I mean, these people are, I've worked with some of these people and they're ruthless. You know, they will go through your bins at 2 a.m. in the morning. They will
hack your phone.
Your exes. They will hack your phone, as we saw. And in fact, a lot of journalists got away with that. Only a couple of people were prosecuted. And the amount of phone hacking that was going on, well, they say phone hacking, it was guessing.
It's voicemail hacking, right?
Yeah, voicemail, guessing the default thing on your voicemail, which is the last four digits of your phone number as standard. And most people didn't change that. It's still scummy practice. I wouldn't recommend it in the slightest. But, you know, British journos do have a reputation for being, you know, like a pit bull going after raw liver. I mean, it's just...
William L. Shirer, the great American journalist who wrote The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, wrote about the British journalist. British reporters, correspondents, and editors were so badly paid that many of them were forced to moonlight at side jobs in order to make ends meet. I got to know a number of them and liked them, but they were rather an unhappy lot. Since they had to write what their publishers dictated, they were a little ashamed of their jobs. Over their cups in a pub, they used to recite a little jingle that was going the rounds in Fleet Street. You cannot buy or bribe or twist that saint, the British journalist, but seeing what the man will do unbribed, there's no occasion to.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot going on. There's a website, and they now do a newsletter called potbitch.com, which is made up of journalists who put out the stories that they can't put in print because they get sued to hell and back. But I recommend that. But I mean,
how does the UK do without the First Amendment? We often in the US think everybody has the First Amendment. No, it doesn't.
Well, no, the First Amendment only protects you against government
regulation of speech. Or, yeah, by the way, exactly, very important to note in this time, peaceful protest is also protected by the First Amendment.
Right to assemble.
Yeah.
But I mean, for us, it's down to the libel law. We have a very strange libel law where it is up to the person that wrote the article to prove their innocence rather than the opposition prove
that's
guilt.
Hard. Yeah.
You can't get legal aid for it, so you're on your own. And libel cases can be very, very expensive.
So
you have to get good about implying, hinting at, you know, all these things that, you know, you basically just got to get good at getting your point across without actually saying it. I mean, everyone knows that a certain member of the royal family is a disgusting individual with depraved habits, but you can't actually say that in print. You've merely got to imply it.
You really have to say,
you Andy, assume everybody knows that.
You just assume. You just say this Andy guy is not great, and just
I wouldn't mention that.
He didn't even mention a name. He said no names.
I'm not saying that he's part of the royal family. I'm just commenting that this Andrew guy is
just someone who's very keen on women's volleyball, and you know, it's just. Although I did love the old joke, when Prince Charles got diagnosed with COVID, it was like, Prince Charles is hiding in Balmoral with COVID-19. Andrew is hiding in Windsor with Emily, 15.
Oh, ow. Actually, as I remember, the prince is being asked to testify in the U.S. in the Epstein matter?
Oh, he insists that he wants to give every possible, you know, help to the U.S. investigators. Besides actually coming to the U.S. and giving them the interview.
Yeah, exactly. But that's just a problem, right? And also, I'm sure that after seeing the BBC interview.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, crap. There's
that wasn't well done on his part.
I mean.
So the DOJ has requested an interview with Prince Andrew as part of the Epstein matter. Federal prosecutors in the Manhattan U.S. Attorney's Office submitted it to the U.K. Home Office. But I would suspect that a member of the royal family is protected against any kind of requirement to come to the U.S.
If he never goes to the U.S., then he's probably going to be okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, Christine, that interview you brought up, it was just pathetic.
It hurt him badly.
Well, it's just like, I don't sweat because I was in the Falklands War, remember? And therefore, I don't sweat. And I wasn't there that night because I took my daughter to a Pizza Express in Woden. Oh, if you want a good giggle, go to the TripAdvisor reviews for the Pizza Express in Woking. It was just like, their hot pizza was great, but it didn't make me sweat. I saw some straight pedo in the corner.
Pizza Express in Woking flooded with fake reviews after Prince Andrew interview. If you're in need of an alibi, this restaurant's for you. Somehow I just don't see Prince Andrew going there, but maybe he does.
You know, I mean, I'm a Republican with a small R anyway. I don't believe the womb lottery is a good way of choosing your head of state, but in Prince Andrew's case, it's just like, get the guy out of here, you know, help the police with their inquiries and see what comes out of it, because it's not like he's going to be king or anything. He just happens to be the Queen's favorite son.
Yeah.
Exactly. She's just the one that he's just the one that she likes. That's it.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, also, I've got to say this, and, you know, there's all the jokes about Prince Harry not being Charles's son and the rest of it. But if you look at the Queen's family, you've got Charles, tall, balding, Anne, very tall and broad, Edward, quite tall and balding, Andrew, short, squat, full head of hair.
Doesn't look much like Dad. Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't dream. Sorry, what was that?
I said he's the only one who's got his hair. I mean, Harry. Yeah. I've been saying, I've been very upset for Meghan for years. I've been like, okay, now that they're in the U.S., get him get with Elon's hair guy and get him some Propecia or something.
Wait
you know,
a minute.
Because
baldness. I'll have to ask Aunt Pruitt about this, but I believe baldness comes down through the matrilineal line. Yes,
That's what they say.
That's what they say.
I totally disagree. No one on my maternal side is bald.
Really?
Everyone on my dad's side is.
There you go. So maybe.
Okay. Because you see, my mum, I went back for Christmas a couple of years ago, and with a classic case of tact, mum looked at me on Christmas Day after the second bottle of wine and said, "You look just like my father. And you're losing your hair in the same places as well."
Thanks, mum.
Great.
Thank you. Glad I flew all this way for Christmas.
Oh, no, you've got to have a British Christmas. I mean, American Christmases are fine.
No, you guys know.
British Christmases are drunken food frenzies, and I highly recommend them.
I will never forget my first taste of plum pudding with hard sauce.
Oh,
I can still taste it.
Yeah, okay. It sits in the stomach like a cannonball, but, you know, after that,
it is actually, it is a cannonball.
Those are the best meals. Those are the best meals.
I know. You want them to sit in your stomach like a cannonball. Absolutely. That's how you know you ate it.
That's right.
Our show today brought to you by a fine sponsor that you all know very well. I sleep on this sponsor every night. I'm talking about my Casper mattress. I love my Casper. It's an online retailer of premium mattresses. They invented this whole idea of eliminating the middleman. They were one of the very first direct-to-consumer companies. The Casper founders understood that in the mattress business, the price you pay, half of that goes to that mattress store. They mark it up so much that you're paying for the privilege of a couple of minutes lying on a mattress in a brightly lit store. That's the whole deal. So if they could just eliminate that store, they could cut their prices by a lot. That's exactly what they did. They make amazing mattresses. They come in an amazingly compact box. That in there, that box that I'm opening right now, that is a king-size mattress. And it's a fantastic mattress. The original Casper combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with just the right amount of sink and bounce. And it's a breathable. All the Casper mattresses breathe. So you sleep cool. Really important, because it turns out a cool sleep means you'll sleep better. I'm opening right now the hybrid. This combines the pressure relief of the award-winning foam they're famous for with durable springs. They also have the Casper Essential. If you're buying, when I bought, you know, my mattress for my son in his college dorm, the Essential, perfect, streamlined design at a price that won't keep you up at night. In fact, it was so affordable. After 4 years, we said, Henry, just leave it there. We'll get you a new mattress when you move home. The Wave, love this one, features a patent-pending premium support system to mirror the natural shape of your body. And then, of course, Casper also has the best pillows and sheets, that glow light. Look, even Sammy loves our Casper mattress. Sammy did not review it, although there are 20,000 reviews, an average of 4.8 stars on the Casper site, Amazon, and Google. It is fast becoming the internet's favorite mattress. My favorite mattress. Sammy loves that mattress, too. You'll love your Casper. Now, you might say, but I want to pay twice as much so I can spend 3 minutes in a mattress store trying before I buy. Well, you don't have to, because Casper invented this, too. They give you 100 nights to sleep on your mattress. It's absolutely risk-free. A 100-night sleep-on-it trial. Free shipping, painless returns to the U.S. and Canada. If any time in those first 100 days you say, yeah, maybe it's not for me, they'll come and get it. You don't have to fit it back in that box, I promise. They'll come and get it, and they'll refund you every penny.
I bought one a couple months ago because our bed was just pretty craptastic, apparently, and the missus was not going to go to bed with me at night anymore.
It's always for the missus, isn't it?
Yeah, she was like, I'm not doing this anymore.
Nope, don't like it.
Never mind the fact that she had been pissed off at me for a week or two for something I said didn't say or do or didn't do.
At least you weren't on the couch.
You know, but I did get the Casper, and holy moly, that bed is freaking awesome.
I love it. In years by, I've gone and bought a very, I won't say the name, very expensive mattress at a mattress store. They say, and by the way, when you get it home, just air it out for a few days before you sleep on it.
Yeah, that was the old style. Yeah,
it's terrible. Casper, no. You got that box, I open it up. It's, I don't know how they do it. It smells great. Doesn't smell like a mat. It's normal, and you can use it right away. So, yeah, unlike the even more expensive mattresses from the mattress store, no off-gassing. It's a wonderful mattress. Right now, you can save $100, $100 off select mattresses. Just go to Casper.com/twit1. Casper.com/twit1 and use the code twit1 as you check out to get that special deal. Terms and conditions apply. Get a Casper mattress today. Casper.com/twit1. Offer code twit1. Please use that. That way they know you saw it here, and it helps us a little bit. We had a fun week this week. I don't know if they got the best, the Christina Warren in the not the match game.
She's legendary at this game.
She's so good.
I love the game. And Ant, thank you for helping me get the win. That was like the best.
Yeah. Oh, assist to Ant Pruitt. Let's watch. Yeah.
Previously on Twit.
The bonus round, it's just Apple blank.
I went with the iPhone.
Ding, 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 ding. iPhone. Oh.
And.
Sucks.
Wrote all sucks. About Android.
So what you're looking at is the Razer Keychain. Razer had an event and they were showing off a gamepad controller for Android, and this is it.
Hands-on photography.
I've been getting a lot of emails that's asking a similar question. RAW versus JPEG.
Yeah.
Twit News.
Today we are following closely Sony's big event, the future of gaming.
I think what we saw today was pretty exciting. There's a lot of really cool looking games, and the hardware itself, much bolder design than I would have ever expected from Sony.
iOS today.
Why is there something? There's like a fish on my head.
It looks
that's
like
my new app tab.
Wow. I believe I'm a biker pug.
So am I. Well, let's ride.
What's our biker gang called?
Pug Uglies.
Pug yeah. Ugly.
Twit. Unbelievable as always.
That was disturbing.
Although I've got to say, respect, Ant. The Apple sucks thing would have been my response.
Really good, isn't it?
I just spoke from the heart. I'm sorry.
So funny.
You're obviously an Android lover.
I apologize.
Actually, speaking of disloyalty, after I saw that PS5 reveal, which, by the way, Jeff Cannata, thank you for doing that with Jason Howell. My old friend Jeff, who's getting a little gray, Jeff. I thought, I'm an Xbox guy. I thought, I'm getting a PS5 this fall. I'm not getting an Xbox. I'm sorry, Christina. Don't forgive me.
I mean, look, I'm for the new Spider-Man alone.
Doesn't that look awesome?
Looks amazing. And my friend Evan worked on it, which when we found that out, because he'd kept it quiet, we were all like, all right. So, no, I mean, it looks great. I actually just got the Xbox One X, which... I know it's stupid to buy it at the end of the cycle, but the Cyberpunk 2077 edition became available, and it just is beautiful. And so, yeah,
it is. I saw one. I have. I love it. I have not playing the Cyberpunk game. Do you like it?
Well, the game is not out yet, so this is the hilarity. So the game has been delayed until like the fall, but the limited edition console came out, and it's just the design is like really, really good. So it will include the game when the game inevitably is released, but until then, it's just, you know.
And I love it. Spider-Man is black. Miles Morales. Yeah. I think that's fantastic. Yep. And he's finally got a decent haircut, by the way. previous versions, the hair wasn't quite natural, but I think this really looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait.
When I played video games, I was a Sony PlayStation guy. The last thing I had was the PS3, but hardheads, they like Xbox, or one in particular. So we have the Xbox One.
Yeah, both.
And the other one has, I think it's the S or 1S. I don't know. It's
There's the X, and
To be fair, the next generation Xbox, the Series X, looks great too. Mm-hmm. But I
just use it for my home entertainment. It's pretty much my television is through the Xbox One.
That's why I'm getting the PS5, because it has a UHD. One of the versions has a UHD drive in it, and that's what I want. I want to be able to play my Blu-rays.
Nice.
I think Microsoft, do they have the drive in?
No, they do.
Mine does. Yeah.
The current one does.
Series X will have it as well. Okay, I think at this point, that was actually my only criticism of the PS5, is it's weird to me that they're coming out with a digital version and a version with the disc. Because to me, I'm like, okay, I get that you don't want to have discs, that you want to just like put the final nail in GameStop's coffin and you want to sell directly and whatnot. But if the market isn't ready to do that, and it isn't for a lot of reasons, you know, internet isn't great everywhere. Internet. Some people have, you know, bandwidth caps, and you're talking about Gears is like 100 gigabyte download, right? Like these are substantial things. It makes sense to still distribute things on disc. But if you're not ready to go all in on digital, it just seems weird to me to have both versions available at launch, especially when the digital version isn't any smaller. And I'm going to come out and predict this. I don't know anything, but I would be very, very, very surprised if it was, you know, much less expensive. So
it's skinnier. It doesn't have that lip.
Yeah, but it's the same like width, right? Like it's not going to take up less room on your shelf. It's really not. So it's just it's weird to me to release both. I feel like go all in or don't, you know, because we know what's going to happen when they have their first revision, you know, in a couple of years. That's when they'll drop the disc, which fine. But like if you're not ready to do that yet, it just seems weird to me to have two different SKUs, two different like production lines. You know, and
is that just a way of keeping it from being a exclusivity issue where they're sort of hedging their bet and allowing everybody in?
Sony owns the Blu-ray UHD spec. So if they didn't put a disc in, it would be a tacit admission that there's no future for Blu-ray.
But I guess my point is, why do a digital version at all? Is my point. Like,
oh,
it's not.
Oh, I got you. Because the form factor is the same. So
exactly. I'm saying if you're not ready to do what you really want to do, which is drop the disc, then why not just wait like the 2 years and drop the disc next time anyway? Because like Sony has the history of that, right? Like the PS3, the first one had backward compatibility. The next one didn't.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They do that all the time, or they will like take features away. So like the audience will be annoyed, but they won't be surprised. So it's just weird to me to have two of them at the beginning. It seems like they're just A/B testing, and it's like you don't have the strength in your convictions to either do what you really want to do or to like suck it up and admit defeat that like, the market's not ready.
Do you still go to GameStop?
Did
you buy an Animal Crossing card?
Oh, I I actually did, yes, because I have two Switches. And
you have to switch.
In order for you to play them, you have to have the game on each, and you can't buy multiple things. Right. And I think for used games, like, I'll still occasionally do that.
That's the reason. And I think that's also the reason Sony hates it. And that's the reason Michael, our son, still goes to GameStop. He wants to sell the used discs, right? There's no real advantage to a disc because as soon as you put the disc in, you download 50 gigabytes worth of crap anyway.
It's not like you DLC.
Yeah. It's not like you don't have to download the whole game anyway.
Exactly. No, I mean, Sony and all the console makers hate the physical things, I think, right? Yeah. Like, they would all love to just go directly to
them. They don't like
them.
The used market, for one thing.
No, because they don't get anything from it. And you know, like, and I understand that. And I understand consumers like it. What I'm saying, though, is that most of us at this point, like, buy our games digitally because it's just faster and easier. And, you know, it would be great if you could download your disc legally onto your system if there was some sort of fingerprint thing, and then you could get the best of both worlds. But when a company tried to say that that would be an idea last generation, and
it's copy
said
protection.
Your console has to no. When they said your console has to be connected to the internet all the time,
yes.
Then people revolted and freaked out, and so we lost that. Right. Not that I'm bitter, you know, 7 years later, but I have to deal with discs, you know, occasionally. Like Spider-Man is actually one example. Like, I have to always put it in when I want to play the game because it came with my PS4. You know,
it's
like
so
all right.
Annoying. Yeah. I
mean, we're
this.
Back to DRM again, though.
But that's the reason. Same. Yeah, that's the other reason.
It's
yeah.
the same problem. I have to say, I'm feeling like a bit of a Luddite. And I, this is a shameful thing to admit on this show, but I've never owned a console of any kind.
Wow.
I've always been PC Master Race.
This is why you write so well and you're at the register.
Is your idea of a good game, a brisk hand of cribbage? What is it that...
No. Because in Britain, you guys had the Amigas and you had like the Zed whatevers, right? Like you had
the Sinclairs and the BBC Acorn.
Spectrum.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I first started playing games, you loaded them on
those little things.
Tape, and you mixed around with the controller. So the software would load. But honestly, give me a PC. I mean, for Doom, for Duke Nukem, for Civ 2, for Age of Empires, these are all better done through a keyboard. And you've got to upgrade your hardware occasionally, but I just hate the idea of buying a dumb computer. I know this is a Luddite thing to say, but it's just
it was actually interesting is that both the PS5 and the Xbox Series X are going in that direction, right? Where they are basically computers, but it's in a console form factor. And I mean, look, I think most people would agree that if you're wanting to do, like, most competitive gamers, most other things, like, unless you're really into exclusives for a certain console, you know, most hardcore gamers are PC gamers. I personally I've grown up using controllers, and that's just how I like to play my games.
Some games are better with controllers.
But I do totally, I don't think you're being a Luddite. If anything, I think actually, like, it's interesting. We've had this kind of rise in PC gaming and people building their own systems and buying that sort of thing. And I think that's been led by the fact that, you know, to get the best graphics and best advantages and the cutting edge stuff that's all happening on
the
PC.
It's so much work. You got to get the right video card. You got to get the drivers, and the drivers don't work. And
but that's part of the fun. You know,
it's part of the fun.
Like,
that's fun for you.
No. I mean, it's just like, you know, it's the endless struggle between more power and more, you know, more power and more software grunt. But it has given benefits. So it was a great example of the U.S. Navy, where they were spending $1 million on submarine torpedo targeting tracking devices. And they just replaced it with an Xbox controller because that's what people have grown up with. And they've saved themselves a fortune, and the Navy personnel prefer it. So, you know, consoles are fun, and I get the handheld controllers thing is fun. I'm just an old-fashioned guy and I like a keyboard. You know, it's like, I want increments done on a keystroke, not just like yank it one way
or
the other.
Actually, there is a tech angle to that as well, another tech angle, because the Navy moved to touch screens for its control. And you remember the McCain had a fatal accident, and it came down to the fact that they had two helmsmen, one in the front, one in the back, and they couldn't really use the touch screens very well. So the Navy is actually going back to physical throttles. Like joysticks and steering wheels, and because the touchscreen was so complex, sailors lost control of the ship.
I gotta say, when the Dragon capsule launched up to the ISS earlier on, the SpaceX capsule, and I saw they were just using touch screens, I was kind of like, you know, I kind of like physical controls.
That made me very nervous.
If you're at max Q vibration going up through the atmosphere, do you really want someone in a spacesuit trying to push the right button? You know, give them some physical controls.
I mentioned that, and somebody said to me that the touchscreens are just a backup system. And while they will use that, they also have switches. In fact, I really thought this was hysterical. In your car, I don't know if you know this, there is a handle, not for the driver, but for the passengers, that Lisa calls the handle that you grab whenever Lisa's driving. Anyway, I grab. And that's kind of what they built, an old crap handle into the space vehicle, because there is a handle in front of them. I don't know if you noticed this, in front of the two astronauts, and they can hold on to it while they're going like this, and there's physical switches on it that they can control.
Oh, wow. So, I didn't notice that.
Yeah. So I thought that was actually good industrial design.
It's that mental reassurance thing. It's kind of like when I'm driving with my mum and I'm sitting in the passenger seat, and if she has to slam the brakes on, she will thrust her arm out like that to hold me back.
Yes, my dad used to do that.
That's going to work at 40
miles. my mom does that. My mom always. My sister does, too. Yes, they're like
that's a parent move. Yeah. Like, you can stop a 180 ball pound cannonball from going through that window by sticking your arm.
Oh, but come on! I get the feeling. It's really lovely that they do it, but come on, let's not kid ourselves on this.
Ant had a good point. I think Ant's arm would work. That'd be a good.
Ant could do it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
Ant could do it. Look at that.
My arm, no.
Like, that's better than the bar on a roller coaster, Ant. I'd feel safer holding on to that.
Sorry. And you've got biceps that are thicker than my neck, for goodness sake. And respect to you for doing it, but it just like...
Highly recommend, if you want to look like Aunt Pruitt, at least that's my hope, the hands-on wellness on the TRX workout at home. I'm going to end up looking like you in weeks, right, Aunt?
I give you months, sir, not weeks, months.
I was going to say, this is a year thing.
Christina, weeks, you months.
Weeks, okay.
No, that was this. I love hands-on wellness, by the way. You're doing a great job. And,
thank you, sir.
And I love the hero picture from the website. Because, you know, if you look at that, you go, yeah, I think he might know about wellness. He might actually. But the most recent one, I love also the hero picture of the TRX-80.
Wow.
I just have fun with something else.
Oh, yeah. No, that's good. That's very
good. Do you do your own Photoshop for those?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. It's not a TRX-80.
It's a combination between me and Mr. Victor. We both sort of tag team it, but the last couple I've just sort of done myself.
It's a TRX. The TRX-80, I think I'm confusing that with a TRS-80. Which was
right.
The
it's just TRX. Right.
There's no 80.
No 80.
There's no 80 involved. Hey, I want to talk about Apple, WWDC, the rumor mill. Ant, you can just say it all sucks. It all sucks. It all sucks.
No,
it's okay.
No. I do. I respect Apple. Apple has done some amazing things from the industrial design side of it, and just the way they handle standards with security. I give them credit for that. I just don't like the Apple tax that comes along with it.
It's no TRS-80, but it's okay. We'll talk about that in just in just a bit. Ant Pruitt's here from Hands On Photography, Hands On Wellness. Christina Warren is here from Microsoft, Channel 9, Senior Cloud Advocate. Are you? They're not going to do the tours again for a while, I would imagine. You were on the road.
Probably
a lot
not.
For a while.
Probably not. We're all allowed to work from home until at least October. Good. So I don't know when that will be starting again.
Yeah. Good. Stay home. Stay safe. Ian Thompson, also, who would normally be sitting right next to me, sharing a little tipple with me. But
there's a British pub on the way to Petaluma, which I'm missing an awful lot.
I know. You got your Scotch egg. He's going through Scotch egg withdrawal.
Oh, well, that's
I want to try a Scotch egg.
Oh, you've got to do it. Seriously.
I probably should just. So I guess I could do it at home. I know how they're made. I should probably do it
at
home.
Yeah, you could make it at home. But stay away from the bacon buns.
You need a deep
that's
fat
disgusting.
Fryer, though. And I've always found those rather wasteful because basically you've got a saucepan of fat that doesn't do anything for a while.
Yeah. No, that's a good
point. But yeah, good Scotch egg. Oh, thing of beauty.
Basically, it's a hard-boiled egg wrapped with sausage.
Sausage.
Sausage meat and then fried. Covered in breadcrumbs and fried.
Sounds awesome.
That there's a reason why awesome. the average death rate in Glasgow is 52.
Oh my god. And and bake, what are these, bacon buns, bacon bunnies, what are they called?
Oh, bacon butties.
Butties.
Oh, god. Proper bacon, by the way, which is a strip of meat with a strip of fat on the side, not a fat strip with optional pork, which is fried to such an extent that when you touch the pork,
I will fight you to the death on that one.
I'm sorry, mate. You and I are going to have
bacon buddies are disgusting.
Oh, God, you never lived, man. Seriously. Yeah, two
this
slices.
This pandemic stuff has got to go. Me and this cat, we got to hook up. My goodness.
Oh, yeah.
He should take you on a British food tour, and
thick slices of white bread, smear them with margarine and tomato ketchup, put bacon on them. If you're feeling really good, put chips on them as well. Sorry,
French fries. Yeah. Liberty fries.
So a bacon and
chips are crisp in Britain.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just food of the gods, man. Admittedly, the gods that die early through heart disease, but you know.
Don't put margarine on it, though, please. I beg of you. Use butter. It's okay. It's okay. Our show today, it's glad to have you too, Ian, from theregister.com. Our show today brought to you by stamps.com. Nobody at this point is anxious to go to the post office to buy stamps or to mail packages. Fortunately, you don't need to, because you can do everything you would do at the U.S. Postal Service from your desk. And now, not just the U.S. Postal Service, UPS as well. Stamps.com is a boon. We've been using it for, I think, 10 years in the office. It's fantastic. I use it at home now, too, because I need stamps. I print them out from my computer with my printer. No special ink, no postage meter, just stamps.com. You can print postage on demand. You can get discounts you won't even get at the post office. U.S. Postal Service, but also now United Parcel Service, UPS. And UPS with discounts up to 62%. And I didn't know this, but if you send UPS to a house, to a residence, and I guess everybody who sells on Etsy or Amazon or eBay knows this already, they charge you a surcharge, like $5 extra, not with stamps.com. No residential surcharge. They negotiated that with UPS. If you are selling stuff online, if you're shipping stuff, you've got to have stamps.com. We've been using them at Twit since 2012. And if you aren't using them, what are you waiting for? Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your computer in the safety and comfort of your own home or wherever you're hunkering down right now. For a small business, if you're sending out invoices or brochures, if you're an online seller shipping products, if you're just working from home and you need to mail stuff, it's easy. Stamps.com is easy. You can use your own computer, your own printer. You can print your own stamps, your own postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send, and now with UPS as well. Now, the beauty part is you don't have to get up from the desk. Once your mail is ready, you leave it for the mail carrier. Or you could schedule a free package pickup. You could drop it in the mailbox if you feel like taking a walk. No human contact required. It's just that simple. I mean, this is the time. If you've been waiting to get stamps.com, and I'm telling you, the discounts, 5 cents off every first class stamp, 5 cents off every first class stamp, up to 62% off shipping rates. Stamps.com comes with a USB scale. You plug it right in the computer. It'll even suggest a better rate. Is that a book? You could do it by media mail. Saves you money that way too. Stamps.com is a no-brainer. It saves you time. It saves you money. It helps keep you safe in these crazy times. And like I said, we have been using it. Actually, they've been advertising with us since 2012. I've been using it longer than that. I know it's been at least 10 years. I love stamps.com. Right now, we've got an amazing offer. I want you to take advantage of this. Go to stamps.com. Click the microphone up in the right-hand corner. See the Radio Crazy Radio microphone that says, yeah, I heard this on a podcast or a radio show. The offer code here is TWIT. Just enter TWIT. Unbelievable deal. You're going to get $55 in free postage. You're going to get that USB scale. You're going to get a $5 kit for, you know, all the stuff you need. And you're going to get a month of stamps.com. It's $110 value. Stamps.com. No, there's only one way to get this, though. This is not the offer on the front page. You got to go to Stamps.com. You got to click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, and you got to enter TWIT. That also, besides getting you that great deal, gets us a little credit, which is nice. We love the Stamps folks. I've been working with them for so long. Stamps.com. Offer code is TWIT. I don't think they're the longest advertiser on TWIT, but they're one of them. And they've been on the radio show. That's why. They've been on the radio show even longer. I've been doing their ads forever and ever. Yeah, I love them. Stamps.com. Ian Thompson is now in the chat room.
Our chat room is so
messing
hilarious.
With he says, forget waffles, go for bubble and squeak.
I've learned if you really want to fire up the chat room, talk Apple, talk Linux, talk
good.
Food.
Let's do it right now. Let's fire up.
We're talking British bacons at the moment. So
are they in favor of the bacon butty?
It's fry-ups because in America you go for hash browns or waffles. Whereas traditional British, bubble and squeak. So that's mashed potato and cooked cabbage fried.
Need it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm exactly. With you, Christina.
Preferably fired bacon.
Oh, gosh.
I don't want my food to make noise.
No. Bubble and squeak, eggs, bacon, sausage, black pudding, fried mushrooms, liver and onions if you're feeling really good. You know, that is the classic fry-up.
I get it. The bubbling and squeak is not coming from the food. It's coming from you after you eat it.
That comes about 4 hours later. Yeah.
Oh, Lord. So while the stock market has been a little cuckoo over the last few months...
A little
crazy. It's up one day, down another day. It's just, it's crazy. Apple has taken advantage of this. Apple is a hot commodity. They are now very close to, if not at, $1.5 trillion in market cap. Unbelievable.
Well, it comes back to what Ant was saying. I mean, we call it the Cupertino idiot tax. You know, you are massively overpaying for the hardware that you buy, and Apple are fine with that. You know, it's just like, give us your money, suckers. And if you want repairs, just buy new kit. We're going
to
charge you.
And I will say, as one of those suckers, we're fine to, like, pay it. Like, in most cases, I'm like, all right, that's fine. I'll take the trade-off.
I just wish I had bought Apple stock at its low, which is March 23rd, with all of the stock market. It was down to $224. It is now more than worth $100 more, $338. What was I thinking?
I wish I bought it in 1998. I mean,
well, there you go. Okay. If we're wishing.
That was really good pricing.
If we're wishing, 98 would have been a good year to buy. But really, there is nothing really to celebrate. I mean, look, the stock market has nothing to do with fundamentals. I've learned that. But what would you celebrate with Apple? They don't have anything really new. Maybe this augmented reality glasses next year.
Come on. I mean, it's just like we've invented new AirPods, and that's it. Since 2011, pretty much, that's all the new stuff they've invented. I mean, okay, there was the butterfly keyboard, which didn't work.
The keyboard.
They had
the Apple Watch.
The light strip, which didn't work. The Apple Watch. Yeah, but who wants to wear one of those things?
How about the HomePod?
Literally, hundreds of like tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people like wear the Apple Watch.
Wear it now every day. I wear it every day. Yeah,
but I mean, what does it do for you that a smartphone can't?
No, that's because the point. It's not a smartphone. It's on my wrist.
It's not.
Yeah,
and it's also it makes people tremendously rude because whenever your watch vibrates, the automatic thing is to look at it. And if you're in a conversation with someone and you're looking at your watch, that's the equivalent of saying, bugger off, I've got other things to do with my life.
Right, right.
You know, I'm not sold on smartwatches. The earbuds are cute. But really, since the iPad, they haven't come up with anything that's really game-changing.
Christina, you and I are going to just split off from this program.
No, but look, they haven't done anything like game changing or what have you, but they do a damn good job with their laptops just running so super efficient on lower spec hardware. You know, they don't have all of the gazillion gigs of RAM, and typically they don't always have the upper echelon Intel CPU in it, but yet the thing runs like a freaking beast, where on the Windows side, I have to put in at least 32 gigs of RAM and a decent SSD and have some type of, you know, high-end chip.
And then you have to run Windows, which no one should have to run.
I was going
to
say, grab yourself some Linux, mate. Honestly, it's the way forward.
Linux is so much better. I mean,
okay, now, obviously, if OS X is based on Linux, but it's just... And I do admire the fact that Apple can, because they own the whole hardware ecosystem, they can make their stuff run really, really well. And you got to respect that. But they charge a stupid amount of money for it. And they don't make it easy to repair and update. So
no, but I have to say, though, to be fair, no PC maker anymore makes it easy to fix laptops.
I mean, Dell is maybe the one exception if you get like the XPS 13 or 15 or whatever, because you can do
some repairability of yourself. Yeah, I upgraded my hard drive. Yeah.
But XPS the RAM 13 is a nice bit of kit.
Oh, I love my XPS 13. But the RAM is soldered in. More and more stuff soldered in. Lenovo, which used to make these ThinkPads, used to be you could change the keyboard, the track. Everything's soldered down, starting to be soldered down now. Apple started this by making everything so thin. And in order to make these super compact, thin laptops, you just have to change how you manufacture
them. Yeah, exactly. Oh, you have to solder things in. You have to, you know, make the batteries different. And look, I don't disagree with some of what you're saying, Ian. I mean, I think that you're not completely wrong. But I also think that there is something to be said about just working. I think this is why the keyboard was so problematic and works. Was such a disappointment for so long, because that was just a massive fail. But it just works. You don't have to worry about things. You can have a laptop for a really long time and it'll keep doing what you want it to do. I mean, you know, and frankly, like, there are good Android phones out there. I'm not trying to say that there aren't, but it's really hard to get a better smartphone than an iPhone. It just is. When you're looking all in.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, just
look at the screen,
Google
the camera,
just released,
battery life.
Android 11 in public beta. I put it on my Pixel 4, which is, you know, arguably, you know, the top of the line, one of the tops of the line anyway, Android devices. And it does run better. I have to say, Android 11, it actually runs a little bit better.
Oh, good. But, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
I've got to say, it runs better, but have you found this as well? I find it, my Android is now chewing battery life at a very high rate of noise.
Mine is too. I would normally get to roughly 9 p.m. at night before I even think about having to charge my battery, because it normally ran really, really well. But nowadays,
problem.
Not even close.
With updates, because people are complaining that the latest iOS 13. What is it? 5.5? I can never remember.
Yeah, 13.5, I guess.
5.1 is killing battery life.
Get rid of the jailbreak.
Yeah, the jailbreak fix is killing battery life too. So there must. I mean, these are. I think this is a back and forth thing that they fix and then they break and then. They
Although
fix.
I did love. Have you seen Nokia has now released the 3110 again?
The classic candy bar phone.
Yeah, you can buy it for £35 in American, what that's like $45 maybe. And it's only 2G. You can do text messages, you can play Snake, and you can do phone calls.
Why would you want that?
A mobile.
Okay,
because
so I did.
The battery life
thought...
lasts for 8 days.
So I actually bought. I had to import it from Taiwan or something. But I got whatever. What was the model of the Nokia phone? The one that was like the banana phone. The one they used in the Matrix.
You got the banana phone.
Yeah. So they did the same thing. They made it a 2G version. You can put in I actually think you can put a 4G SIM into it. But you know, you can do SMS or whatever on it. It has Wi-Fi. I bought it because my friend Sue's had it and I had FOMO. So I was like,
Did you get the yellow one? Like the Matrix?
Yeah, I did. I got the yellow one.
Oh, you are so funny.
And it has the color screen, you know, it's kind of like the modern kind of update. And I mean, look, it's a fun throwback and I actually got it so I could maybe do some IoT stuff. So I could, you know, like maybe like use it as kind of a controller for some things because it's running this KaiOS thing, which is, Android, but it's kind of a Linux based thing. Anyway, it's fine, but
you don't use it.
I was reminded of T9 and I could never use that again. I think my video was cut out.
T9, yeah.
Yeah. You have to use T9 on it, which is ridiculous.
Oh, that's so ridiculous.
But I mean, on the other hand,
by the way, that's the Nokia 8110.
Yes. It's the 8110. And I mean, and look, the one thing actually I have used it is that, because it's unlocked, it's been a really good phone to use internationally if I want to just like if I don't want to, because I pay Verizon for my international data, but if I want to have a different phone that I can use as a hotspot of sorts, that actually, it's been a really, really good international phone. Of course, I don't travel anymore, so that's less useful. But the T9 thing, honestly, in 2020, logging into Twitter or Facebook or whatever is such a nightmare. Yeah. I never, like, no.
But I would bet, Christina, your thumbs remember it.
Yeah, but
did it come back to you?
But the process of going through the passwords and all that stuff, it gets back, but it's just so slow. I'm just like, no, like, you know, I haven't done this in 15 years for a reason, right? Like,
reminds like you of being in junior high. Yes, I had a sidekick too. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I do remember when The Matrix came out and they brought that phone out after the film.
Yep.
And we had a delivery guy who would deliver, this is on PC Mag, you know, our main delivery guy who would deliver review samples in. He's a biker. He always carried this kit on the back of his bike. Came in and he's just like, oh, his phone went off. And he was like, chick. Yeah, I'm the coolest guy in the world.
Yeah.
You
know?
There is something.
It's kind of cute we get that throwback.
I bet you in the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, Chaz, there are a few hipsters carrying around maybe a Nokia 3510 or, you know.
I don't think so.
No? Even there? No?
I mean, honestly, the only use case for these is when you're.
Video? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, the only use case for these is when you're either at a conference as a backup phone because you can't find a PowerPoint, or if you're going camping and you need a phone which lasts for a week without a recharge. Just for emergencies.
I think, though, that there are people in the autonomous zone, but they all came from Oregon with their Nokia phones.
Maybe the Oregon people do. But everybody who lives in the Chaz, or now they're trying to call it the CHOP, like everybody who lives here, we all work in tech. The Capitol Hill occupational protest, that's the name they're trying to use now, because it's the Chaz kind of took things away from Black Lives Matter and was co-opted by hippies, and so now they're trying again to rebrand it, which unfortunately everyone's just going to call it Chaz. But
we're talking about and Christina lives two blocks from it, so that's why we're talking about it. We're talking about the area in Seattle that has been occupied by protesters. The police have abandoned, and it's peaceful. It's like a street fair. It's not a violent area. It's
not at all.
It's just kind of a hangout.
There's a big park. There's grocery stores. Like, there's, you know, it's just people, gathering. It's right next to the East Precinct, and which the police have abandoned.
But nobody set it on fire.
Right. No.
It's peaceful.
No. Yeah. Unlike Wendy's, which deserves to be set on fire, frankly. let's see. Is that O-Doctor in the chat room? Hey, O-Doctor. Good to see you. He's probably here to yell.
I didn't hear him scream.
He's going to yell at me. I know he is. I'm sorry. Let's talk about Apple. They have an event coming up 1 week from Monday, the Worldwide Developers Conference. We will, of course, do our usual, you know, coverage of the stream. It's not this Monday. It's a week from Monday. We'll come and we'll watch and we'll talk. It's expected. Well, you know, they'll announce the new version of Mac OS 10. I think I have a feeling they've been naming it after California landmarks. It's going to be Mac OS Escondido. That's just my thought. They also will announce the new version of iPhone OS, which I think maybe Aunt Pruitt will like. iOS 14, the rumor is, will have widgets. They'll, for the first time in a long time, change that static.
Well, welcome to Android 1.0, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, just piss off all the Android fanboys now.
Go back to 2008 Android,
Are rumors that they might announce a new Apple TV. I love the rumor that they're going to announce a new iMac. I can't afford it. Shouldn't buy it. Happy with my iMac. Fortunately, I'm getting a lot of pressure from John and others to buy it. Thank you, John. Keep that pressure up. it's a very narrow bezel display based on the $5,000 Apple XDR display. Although this one comes with a stand, which is, you know, hey, that's a good deal.
Thanks for throwing that in, Apple.
I mean, come on, let's face it.
The wheels.
You're going to have... You're going to have Apple TV, which is about as popular as a rattlesnake in a pinata.
I like my Apple TV.
It's too expensive, though.
Well, it's $200. But, yeah,
I mean,
it's too much.
But I mean, also, I mean, come on. They're trying to sell us wheels for a computer for $500.
Most people don't need them. Why include them if you don't need them?
Yeah,
why charge $500, though?
Well, there's special wheels. Yes.
Oh, yeah, right.
There's no extending the wheels. Oh, come on.
I mean, it's just...
They're very highly engineered.
They can even lock.
They're special.
It's just, for goodness sake.
I wonder...
I seriously wonder whether the accountants at Apple are going, come on, seriously, how much do you think we can get for this? Yeah, come on, let's do that.
They are.
Who else can pay it?
I wonder...
It does feel like a troll.
Yeah, they're just like...
It's a little Apple-y. The display is $5,000. Or if you want nanotextured glass, $6,000, but it doesn't include a stand, which is an additional $1,000. I wonder how many people, though, just lean their display on some books and leave it at that.
I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like, you know, because none of us are in the market for this. I mean, Leo, you might be, like, some people in your production might
be in the market for this sort of thing. I know nobody legitimately.
Right. So what I'm saying
Marquez Brownlee is the only person in the market for this.
Well, I was saying, like, Hollywood production studios, like big places. These are literally the only people who are buying this, other than YouTubers who are trying to get that sweet, sweet content money. So if you're not trying to get, you know, the sweet click juice, like, it's not for us, which I think as a Mac person is disappointing. But also when I put it in that perspective, I'm like, all right, charge whatever you want, because I'm not going to ever be able to have this anyway. Yeah. Like, this is not for me.
So anyway, there'll probably be some hardware. The big announcement, though, and the one I think that's worth spending some time with, we did on Mac Break Weekly for sure on Tuesday, is the rumor, and this comes from Mark Gurman, well-sourced at Bloomberg, that Apple will at this point announce the transition away from Intel toward their own custom design chips based on the ARM architecture. That is a big deal. Not the first time Apple's done this. It's actually the third time Apple's changed their chipset. They were originally Motorola 68000 based, then they went to PowerPC, then they went to Intel. And all of those transitions took time. I think they were well managed, considering what a big change that is. Mm-hmm. I wonder how long this will take, the ARM transition, and what it will mean. It's not really, I mean, it makes sense. You could do ARM pretty quickly. Honestly, the iPad Pro is probably more horsepower than a MacBook Air. So you could do ARM on a low end, something like a MacBook Air. It's really a question of, can you make an ARM computer that's going to make Aunt Pruitt happy, that my editors would want to use for professional users?
My question was, you mentioned some of the alleged highlights that they were going to talk about. Did you mention iPad OS?
Well, I didn't, because I mentioned iOS 14, and I forget that they make a distinction between iOS for a phone and iPad. I don't know. Is there something new for iPad OS that you know about?
I hope it is, because I still can't quite get used to iPad OS.
You need, first of all, the iPad Pro, but the Magic Keyboard. Transformational. It's a mere $350.
I don't have an iPad Pro. I have one of the latest.
It's less than three wheels. But four wheels. But for the first time ever, I am actually doing real work, real writing, real editing, real posting on my iPad, because the trackpad and the keyboard, which is a good keyboard, much better than the smart keyboard, really do turn it into a decent computer. There's software missing, but it's coming. I think, you know, the software is getting better and better.
The software is already there for me on the iPad. Like I said, I don't have the Pro. I should have gotten the Pro. The more I think about it, I just have the latest non-Pro,
the Air
gen.
Or whatever. Yeah,
and it's nice, but the file system just really
They don't expose it. Yeah,
Affinity for photo editing, and I also use Photoshop on iPad, which has just been recently updated to now have the curves tool and the Gaussian filter, and beautiful, but it's just such a pain in the tuchus to get my files from the cloud and onto the device where I can find them pretty easily. Where Android, just if I download something from the web on an Android device, I go to the downloads folder and boom, there it is. You know,
they don't expose the file system. It's there, but they don't let you get to it. It is a little bit of a, I think it's a, you just have to shift your context, because you're used to a real computer with a real file system. But honestly,
but that's what I thought iPad OS was supposed to do, was to bring you that new file system. I thought they said that in their press release a couple of years ago.
Program.
I mean, they make more of it available, right? Like you have APIs now, and it's better than it used to be. But yeah, I mean, it's not the same. And I think to Leo's point, and I struggle with this myself, right, is that you almost have to go into it with a completely different mindset of saying, okay, I'm going to use this device in a different way. I can't just use it the same way that I used my other computer, which is very different than what that's very different than how like the Surface works.
It's different than a Macintosh, frankly.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it's actually makes more sense, especially from a security point of view, that documents are owned by programs and visible only to those programs. And if you want a document to go from one program to another, you have to share it. Is different from what we're used to, but I think it actually is probably a good idea from a security point of view.
But I mean, this was always Apple's problem. I mean, I got rid of Apple from my life in the early 90s because you couldn't muck about with the operating system. You had to use ResEdit, which was kind of like trying to repair a nuclear reactor.
Yes, but it had it. Yes, but it had it. That's the point.
Yeah, but DOS, you could do that automatically. Yeah, with DOS,
come on,
you
can't compare DOS to Mac System 9 or System 7. That's crazy.
Hey, I could do a lot more with DOS than I could do with the Apple operating system at the time. And even with Windows, okay, not Windows 10 because that's a pile of whatever. But I mean, with older versions of Windows, you could still get into the guts of your system and change what you wanted to change.
I'll give you a wild example.
Apple has always been
this
like,
has changed. This has changed.
This is the way it goes.
I'll give you a wild example. So I have a blog. It's actually hosted on this computer over here, which is running Debian Linux. It's using a static blog generator called Hugo, written in Go. Mm-hmm. Hugo runs on the server. But I am able to modify my blog just by SSHing into that server and either modifying the files directly there or... And I've lately started to do this using a markdown editor on Mac, Windows, or iOS, modifying the file and saving it to this server, and then it automatically builds the site. It's really a great streamlined workflow. Believe it or not, it's the kind of thing you'd expect Linux to be perfect at. You know, you can mount a SSH file system, and I use Emacs and all that stuff, and I was doing that. And then I'm using Panic's code editor from Panic Software on iOS. It's the best workflow I've ever had. It's amazing. It works beautifully on the iPad with the Magic Keyboard, the trackpad. And it's the kind of high-end, geeky, direct file manipulation, logging into a server using SSH thing that you would not expect on an iPad. It actually works better on an iPad than it does on my Dell XPS running Manjaro Linux. So I think we're getting there. I think some of it is contextually, you just have to change your mindset.
Mm-hmm. And I've been able to work around it, but it was when I hear, hey, we're putting a file system on iPad, I think.
Right. No. You think that it's going to be the traditional thing. And I think that's been the big difference, right? Is like if you look at like the Surface devices, like you look at the Surface Go or other things, and you look at like how Touch is integrated into Windows 10, which look, I'm never thought I would be this person, but I actually like Windows 10, especially with the Windows subsystem for Linux 2 stuff and some of that stuff. But the way that treats Touch is very much as an add-on to the existing paradigm. And Apple, it's the inverse, right? Is that they've grafted on the mouse and keyboard stuff. And the ground up paradigm is Touch. And so it's just they have two different approaches, and both of them have their trade-offs. And I think the big trade-off is if you go into it expecting it to work a traditional way, in the case of like iPad OS, or if you go to a Surface device expecting it to work like an iPad. So we haven't reached that like nirvana place of that kind of best of both. We might not until maybe somebody else comes out with a different kind of paradigm.
The proof is if you give somebody who's not used a computer before an iPad, they don't have any of these problems.
Right.
That's
they
correct.
Just use
they
it. It's
every
great.
Time.
It's easy.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I
and
agree.
So a lot of this is our preconceived notion of what a computer is. That's what Apple keeps saying, right? It's what's a
and
computer,
and my preconceived
Dad?
Notion is right, damn it.
I'll grant you that.
But no, I mean, seriously, one of the things that really irritates me about Apple at the moment is that they will not bring Touch to their laptops. because once you have touch on a laptop, it changes things completely. You know, I was a skeptic about this, but then I started using Chromebooks and then Windows machines with touch laptops. So with touch screens, and it make rather than just click, 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 you just go, you know, Apple refuses to do that for their laptop line. And I understand why they're doing it. I just think it's a really lousy decision.
What was your use case for touch on a laptop?
Yeah, when do you use it? Because I never use it. I have two touchscreen laptops and I never use it.
Okay. I get like about 150 emails every morning. So I can just put the email screen up and just go tap, 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 rather than getting the mouse out and doing it. I can drink my cup of tea and do the email clearance, you know, routine the same thing. Okay. It saves me a hand. And also for things like widening and closing, it's just simpler. It saves you a couple of clicks.
I like the touch interface on some of those laptops that we've reviewed for the network when it comes to doing the pinch and zoom, if I'm doing something in Photoshop or whatever, and be able to really immerse myself into those pixels. But outside of that, I never really found much of a use for touch interface on Windows. But I was always curious to see why people desired it.
This is what Christina was talking about is exactly what happened, which is that Microsoft was doing desktop operating systems, saw the popularity of the iPad, said, let's glom touch and tablet onto a desktop OS. That did not work so well. It's working better in 10 than it did in 8. But it was a weird... Apple decided
everything
Apple
works better
said,
in 10
no, we're not going to... We're going to keep Mac OS non-touch. We're not going to do that. We already... The problem is Microsoft had given up on their touch OS. They had lost the phone war. So they didn't have a mobile OS, but Apple has a very credible mobile OS. And I think part of this ARM transition is we've got this interesting triumvirate here. We've got Intel-based Macs. We've got ARM-based iOS. We've got touch on the ARM. We've got no touch on the Intel. I think we're going to see kind of a merge at some point with the ARM systems. I think what Apple's done, I wanted a Mac with touch. I really did for a long time. And now I'm fine because what they did was exactly the perfect thing to do, which is an iPad Pro with a Magic Keyboard with a trackpad. I watched myself working keyboard, touchpad, and touch, a trackpad and touch all at the same time. And it flows very intuitively and easily in a way that it never worked for me on touch on a desktop operating system. There's just a net. Sometimes you scroll with your finger. Sometimes you use a trackpad. It all just works, and it works so intuitively. It's out of the way. And so I'm starting to be a believer that Apple did the right thing, and that's why I'm very intrigued by this ARM transition because Apple has an advantage on iOS. They don't. First of all, they don't have to wait for Intel, which has been a real pain in the butt on the desktop.
True.
They don't have to pay Intel. But more importantly than any of that stuff, they can design a chip that's tailored for its use. Intel sells a general purpose chip that's used everywhere from SpaceX Dragon Crew Dragon to a tablet. But Apple could say, no, this ARM chip is going in a MacBook. This ARM chip's going in a MacBook Pro. This ARM chip's going in a Mac Pro. And tailor it to be more power per watt, less important on a desktop, still low heat. More efficiency is not a bad thing. I think that they can actually make their software sing by making the hardware. That's always been their point of view.
Yeah, I was going to say, wasn't that the culture from the get-go years ago in Apple?
Yeah. So.
Yeah. My only concern, and it'll be interesting to see how they handle it. I mean, like my concern isn't so much how are existing apps going to port over, because I'm sure that there will be some outlier edge cases where they won't be able to just use Xcode and compile to an ARM target rather than x86. And it's possible that they might be able to bring in similar to what they did with Rosetta when they went from PowerPC to Intel, some sort of translation layer. Although that's complicated because doing x64 on ARM is like not really a thing, and x86 in general on ARM suffers. But I think my bigger thing is I can see how a lot of the applications would be able to move over. But I worry that this might be a sign that says if it's not in the Mac App Store, you can't run it, because that would limit things. But B, I do have to feel like, and I realize I'm a complete edge case here. I realize that me saying this is like the smallest part of kind of their, you know, user base. But I do worry about losing things that to me make a Mac, and those are things like virtualization and things like being able to, you know, have my own programs that are outside of the Mac App Store and being able to run, you know, Windows if I want to, or Linux or something else. And, you know, I could see this being an excuse for them to just drop those things and make it just focused on just things in the Mac App Store and other stuff. And I have to say, like, as somebody who deeply loves the Mac and loves a lot of the freedom, which I know is, it's kind of an ironic for me to say, but I feel like I have a lot of freedom with my Mac. I do worry about
yeah,
losing that.
It does.
You know?
Freedom within tightly bound.
No, because you have BSD under the hood. You've got a terminal. You could do anything you want with a Mac.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you switch to iOS, you can't get other apps that Apple doesn't approve of. And I worry that
that's
Apple
not the case on the Mac,
down.
Right?
That's not the case on the Mac. I'm talking about the Mac.
No.
I can actually install any operating system.
Yes.
And I can, I actually
exactly.
have
freedom. And that's why like I hardware. Think they're trying to, sorry, I shouldn't interrupt.
No, I was just saying, like, I get the irony of me saying that. I'm just saying, like, for me, I actually feel like I have a lot of freedom in my Mac right now. And obviously Apple's made some changes around notarization and some other things to kind of tap that down. But at the end of the day, it hasn't been iOS, right? Like, it has been this different platform. And my concern isn't so much that ARM would take that away, because there's nothing about the chipset that would do that. It's that that would be kind of the opportunity to get rid of some of these things that, at least for me, are what makes a Mac a Mac.
I have always worried about it. And I was, when the store came, I said, oh God, it's just a matter of time before Apple says you can only, just like iOS, you can only get things from the store. I think Apple understands that's a non-starter. And I think what Apple's done is they very cleverly balanced security, and Gatekeeper and a store give you security. So far, and I agree with you, Christina, it would be a nightmare if they didn't. But so far, they've always allowed you an escape hatch. Even with notarization, I can go in, and I might have to use a command line ultimately to do it, and modify Gatekeeper to allow me to do whatever I want. And I think that that's Apple's plan. I think they're going to always leave it that way, even with an ARM Mac, because they know that people who buy desktop computers want full control. But they are also going to do it in such a way that people who buy desktop computers who don't want full control and don't want to worry about security have a very secure system. And I think Apple's done a really interesting job. I would say the Macintosh with Gatekeeper and a lot of other lesser known technologies is a very stable, secure operating system, especially when you compare it to Windows.
You see, I worry with Apple that the accountants are going to take over, and they're going to say it'd be much more profitable if we got everyone into this walled garden thing. But that's not what computing's about. And I think a number of Apple, you know, I think Apple is playing quite a clever game here. Mac OS, yeah, when you want to play around with the operating system, when you know your stuff. Everyone else, stick to iOS. Give us your money.
Yep. And I don't see any reason for them to change that. They need developers. They need pro users. They need people who want power control. They're not going to turn their, I would hope, even the accountants wouldn't make them turn their back on those people.
It is interesting, though, to kind of see like the weird timing where we're presumably going to be getting ARM-based Macs, but Apple is also selling $10,000, you know, Intel Macs.
Yeah, they just started.
Right.
They don't want to obsolete that right away.
Like, yeah. Well, that is the interesting question, right? Because it's like, okay, when the last transition happened, they were able to do it in under a year. And it started in January, and they were basically done, you know, by the end of the year when they, you know, kind of finished doing things. And it was a huge success and actually brought a ton of people, including myself. I became a full-time Mac user when the Intel transition happened. Yeah. And you know, but you kind of wonder with this, it's like, okay, you obviously still want to sell and you need to support this high-end audience that is spending $10,000. On a machine. How do you reconcile that with also being like, oh, but we're going to have these ARM-based machines? It and I have no idea how they're going to do it, but that'll be interesting to see, I guess, how they delineate and how they differentiate, you know, the different platforms. And
I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how, because I mean, when Microsoft tried the ARM-based machine thing, it died on its backside.
But they were buying almost off-the-shelf chips from Qualcomm. They weren't making their own chips.
Yeah, exactly. Apple seems to be smarter about this. It's going to be really interesting to see how this turns out.
Apple has 1,000 chip designers. They bought PA Risk.
PA Semi,
which made the PA Risk processors. They have all the expertise, and they have had for some time all the expertise to make a chip that's every bit as powerful as a Xeon. I don't think just because it's a Risk processor, ARM, based architectures are somehow lesser.
I mean, one of the things that makes Apple really good at security is they build their own chips and they build their own security in at the hardware level.
Right.
And I will criticize Apple till the cows come home. But when it comes to security, they're damn good at it because they bake that thing in right at the core. And more power
credit
to
where
them.
Credit is due.
This is exciting to me, this ARM transition. It's a good question, Christina. Is it going to be the one-year PowerPC to Intel transition? Or is it going to take a little longer? I think the bet is it's going to take a few years.
I mean, I think that would make some sense. And I think in some ways, too, maybe that's what you say, like, okay, if you want a really good battery life machine that's going to be, lower weight, thin, have really good battery life, but it's not an iPad, then we have this. It will be interesting, though, to see, like, how do you differentiate and how, because I frankly think they do have a really hard time right now. I don't think they're doing a great job telling people why should you use an iPad Pro and why should you buy MacBook Air. I think that, they cost about the same once you add in the keyboard. And I don't think that story is really, frankly, well told. And so I think this adds complexity to that, too, right? It's like, okay, why do I get an iPad Pro with a Magic Keyboard or an ARM-based, MacBook? Like, that becomes an interesting question. But I'm looking forward to seeing what happens, and I'm positive that I'll more than likely be buying, one of their devices. I mean,
I won't be buying a Mac Pro. I can tell you that right now.
No, I won't be getting a Mac Pro, but I'm saying I could almost certainly be seeing that it, like, getting an ARM-based Mac if only for, because I love gadgets.
As I'm saying, when I added that Magic Keyboard to my iPad Pro, it got pretty close to the kind of power that I want in any computer. It got pretty darn close. It's different. You're exactly right. Mm-hmm. It's different, and you have to rejigger your mindset. But
considering the financial talk we had about them earlier in the show, if you were to look into your crystal ball, because I know you're such a maven about the stock market, what happens after this announcement, alleged announcement that, hey, we're doing our own chips?
Is so complicated right now because we already an hour and a half. I don't know if I want to start this, but I've actually been thinking a lot about this, and Jim Cramer has said some interesting things. You have to understand, there's people with money. There's a very big question mark about the U.S. economy going forward. We're in a recession.
We are.
There's nowhere, but people have this money they got to put somewhere. They're put it in their couch. So it's a very interesting time right now. And that's, I mean, you're also seeing, like, we just saw a record high for the NASDAQ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What?
Well, yeah, the U.S. government is guaranteeing stock exchange returns. Stock exchange
That's exactly
crashed,
right.
Then they put trillions of dollars.
That's
exactly,
and that's one of the unknowns.
Which couldn't be used to wipe out student debt or anything like that. No, trillions of dollars.
That's exactly right.
Yep.
That's one of the unknowns, because come July 31st, when the $600 unemployment check stops.
Goes away.
And when, and then, of course, late in October, you're going to have those mortgages that people have been able to defer come due.
And also the second wave of infections coming in.
It's going to be very interesting.
And also people who got the PPE loans will be able to let people go without putting their loan at risk.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I suspect a crash in the fall. My personal decision was to sell all my stocks. I don't have any. I got out of the market in like March because I did not want to ride this roller coaster.
Right.
And there are a lot of people saying, yeah, but Leo, you're going to miss out when the thing takes off. Yeah, but I also might miss out when the thing hits bottom. I just don't want to play this game. But I'm also old. I don't have time to recoup any losses. This is my retirement money. So I'm in a different position, too. If I tell my kids, stay in it, ride it. Yeah. You got lots of time. You got 30 years before you're going to need that money, 40 years.
No, you buy stocks and you keep them. But
ride
at the same
it.
Time,
yeah.
I mean, this is – when you've got headlines like Dow reaches new heights, unemployment reaches 40 million.
It's bizarre.
There's a serious disconnect. Yeah. This is late-stage capitalism gone mad.
And let's not forget the part of the reason, and I think you just mentioned this. No, you didn't actually. Somebody else in the chat room mentioned it. The shill. One of the reasons Apple stock is that Apple's market cap is worth $1.5 trillion because they have been spending all of the money they're getting on stock buybacks. They're artificially inflating it.
They're
inflating it. So it has nothing. This is the problem I have with the stock market. It doesn't have anything to do with fundamentals.
I mean, we forget that companies buying their own stock was illegal until 1983, I think it was.
Yep.
But Intel has spent $125 billion buying its own stock, yet it still can't produce 10 nanometer chips. I mean, seriously, get your priorities straight.
That's why I'm not in the stock market right there.
Yeah. I get as a CEO that your salary is put on the, is based on the salary price of the share price of the company. But just invest in basic technology.
Yeah.
You can't waste $100 billion while you can't produce chips. This is your job.
Tis a mystery. Let's take one more break, and then we do have to wrap it up. There's still so much to talk about. I wanted to talk about Zoom. Maybe we'll end with Zoom. Because Zoom has had another no good, very bad week. Our show today was brought to you by Worldwide Technology. I love these guys. This was the last time I traveled. It was back in March. We went out to St. Louis to see their Advanced Technology Center. I was blown away. This is something that started in a corner of one building 10 years ago and has grown. It's in three or four buildings now. $500 million worth of equipment from hundreds of OEMs. Key partners ranging from heavyweights like Dell EMC. I saw a lot of storage from Dell in that rack, in those racks. From VMware, from Intel, but also emerging disruptors like Equinix. It's an amazing confluence of all these technologies, and there's a reason it's there, because WWT is a trusted partner for big businesses, for little businesses all over the world. And if you're going to buy Dell EMC storage, you want to try it. You want to integrate it into your system, and that's what they do at the Advanced Technology Center. They've been using it for their engineers to spin up proofs of concept, to do pilots, to show customers what the best solutions are, how this is going to work with that. But now you can use it too, which is even more mind-boggling. This is why WWT is. I think it's actually a secret weapon for the businesses who partner with them. It's been kind of my mission to get this better known. I had known nothing about it when we went out there. I was blown away. And that's now I understand why customers have been with them for more than a decade, because they know they've got a partner here, WWT, that's got the knowledge, the places they can go to get the answers they need. These labs are amazing. On-demand, schedulable labs. You don't have to be in St. Louis, 24/7, anywhere in the world, like Dell EMC, VxRail, Data Protection Center, and IDPA. I mean, the latest in primary storage. But there's hundreds of labs to explore everything from multi-cloud to hyper-converged infrastructure to networking to secondary storage, data analytics, AI, security. It goes on and on. And you get to try all this. It's the best playground ever. It's so awesome. You can learn about products before you launch them, reducing the concept time from months to weeks, your speed to market. And, yeah, I know, we're going through a weird time, but it still makes a difference to have the best technology. And now may be a good time to start looking at your infrastructure. Start going to WWT and saying, how can we make this better? This lab as a service started last summer. Perfect timing, right? Customers can do their own programmatic testing. They've got one of the cages in there. It was so cool. I said, why is that cage separate from all the others? It's got all that gear in there, but it's all locked up. They said, that's the malware cage. That's where we put all the malware, so it has to be air-gapped from the rest of the ATC. But if we need to know how ransomware works, if we need to do research on that, we got it all in that cage over there. It's really cool. I talked to a lot of the engineers. Many of them listen to the show. They all love their job because they get to play with the latest technology. And you do too now. If you want to know more, if you want to take advantage of this digital platform encompassing the entire advanced technology ecosystem, get articles, case studies, hands-on labs, all the tools you need to make a difference in today's fast-paced world, go to wwt.com/ TWiT. It's a multiplier effect of knowledge and speed and agility anytime, anywhere in the world for partner and customers. I have just scratched the surface of the things they do. Unbelievable. Unbelievable stuff. They are there for you. If you need an enterprise, they've got it. WWT.com/TWiT. WWT simplifies the complex worldwide technology, delivering business and technology outcomes around the world and modernizing IT infrastructure for everybody in the right way, the rational way. Thank you, WWT. I guess we'll do this quickly. Unless we want to do the first five-hour TWiT. I think we should. But nobody minds, right? You guys are having fun, right? Anybody fainting from hunger?
My bad. Sometimes I know I can ramble along with my slow pace and cadence.
Your fault. I'll take the full blame. You're great. You're very – you know what I love about Ant? You're soothing. You make me feel better about life. I love having you there. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And some people would call that boring.
No. You're relaxing. Your camera. You need to get a new camera now. Your lips are blue.
Oh, my God.
Your lips are blue. Either you're very cold in there.
She's part of Na'vi now. Na'vi.
I know.
She's an avatar.
Oh, wow. No, it is still. All right. I'm turning this off. I'm going to switch cameras.
Wow. Wow.
A6400 probably got hot.
So Zoom. Zoom is an interesting story. I'm with you, Christina, because I remember when Zoom a year ago got a lot of heat because basically they were installing malware on Macintoshes. And I don't think they did it out of any malicious intent. They wanted to make it really easy to start a Zoom teleconference. So what they did when you installed Zoom on your Mac, they installed a web server. Hey, what could possibly go wrong? They installed a web server on your Mac. And that was so you could click a link, would download the software, it would run the conference. You know, when you uninstalled Zoom, it left the web server running. Again, so that should you ever want to do another Zoom conference, you just click. It's amazing. I thought I uninstalled that. It's still there. It became a problem when hackers started to use it as a gateway into Macs. Zoom did nothing. Apple eventually, nothing. They ignored it. They said, yeah, fine. It's intentional. That's a sign.
When the security researcher reported to them, they were like, no, this is intentional. This is what we want.
Yeah, we wanted to do that. Apple actually had to ship a patch to the operating system to get rid of it. Eventually, Zoom capitulated. But that was a black mark for the company and made me suspect them as maybe not the best people. There were other issues. Along comes COVID. Everybody's conferencing. Suddenly, Zoom goes from 10 million active users in a month in December to 400 million. I think it's almost 600 million now. It's huge. The stock price goes through the roof. They've got tons of money. They hear people. They say, oh, you're worried about our security. We're sending data through China. That's not good. Okay, we're going to hire the best in the business. They went out. They hired Alex Stamos. They went out, they got Katie Mazouras' company. They went out and they bought Keybase. And they got the best cryptographers and they brought them in all in. And Steve Gibson was impressed. These guys wrote a white paper. Steve said, this is our security guy, security now. This is great. This is exactly the right thing. This is the way to do it. But then they made some funny noises. Last week, the CEO, Eric Yuan, of Zoom said, we're going to have end-to-end encryption. They were always claiming end-to-end encryption, even though it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It was decrypted at the servers. We're going to have end-to-end encryption, but we won't have it for free users. We want they literally said we want law enforcement to be able to get into those conferences. Okay. But then they also said, and this was the thing Steve got upset on Tuesday. He was reading this. He said, they also said, two conflicting things. They said, we'll have encryption for paid users. And then they said, but we'll have the keys, which means the whole thing about law enforcement can access the free accounts. Law enforcement can access all the accounts. They don't have end-to-end encryption, and they don't intend to put it in. They got paid for these wonderful people to write this white paper, and they're not going to do it.
Where I'm from, we call that talking out the side of your neck.
Very colorful. That reminds me of what BlackBerry did for many, many years. as the BlackBerry would always talk about how great their encryption was on their devices, and really, on their bez and whatnot, their biz, and really, they would just hand the keys over to law enforcement.
They gave it to China. They gave it to they gave it to Russia. Anybody who asked, they said, "Oh yeah, you want the server keys? No problem. Here you go." So and then now the latest thing is on the anniversary of the Tiananmen massacre, an American Chinese activist in America had a Zoom conference talking about it. Some people in China joined the conference. Chinese government went to Zoom, said, ban that guy. And they shut down an American Zoom account.
Son of a mother.
No, they've shut down a lot of American Zoom accounts. And it's quite frankly shameful. I mean, they're just like, we'll do end-to-end encryption, except we won't, and we'll charge you for it. I mean, this is
and the minute content. President Xi comes to us and says, shut it down, we don't. Now, I understand. Look, Apple does that in China. Apple just took two apps out of the App Store.
Microsoft and Yahoo as well. Yeah.
But that's because they're in China and they're doing business in China. They have to follow the laws of the country they're in. So you could make some case for that. But that's different from shutting down American activists in America because China asked you to. Now, Zoom is an American company, but all of the all the coding is done in China by three separate Chinese companies. I still think Zoom has tight ties to the Chinese regime. And I honestly do not, after this, do not trust Zoom.
No, I avoid it wherever possible. I do find it particularly galling when they're just like, okay, well, we will provide end-to-end encryption, and then they just don't. I mean, as you pointed out, they will hand this over to whichever government asks for it. So, yeah, don't trust
them. It's not end-to-end. If they have the keys, that ain't end-to-end.
I mean, when they first started, I mean, okay, when COVID really kicked in, and it was kind of like, well, it's a small startup. They can't be expected to have
got
all the security. Yes. Yeah, you give them a pass on that. But then when they get in Stamos and Mazuris and, you know, the security A-team, and then tell them, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do what's convenient for us. The hell with them. You know, just dump them, people.
They said, they told Bloomberg, we did it because China asked us to. But we won't do that again.
Yeah, right.
I mean, to me, it kind of goes back to, like, from the beginning, the reason that I got mad at them last year was because, like, I really think that they have a great product. But from installing malware, and that's what they did, to all of their security kind of talking out of both sides of their mouth, as Ant said, to, you know, handing things over to and just doing the dirty work of the Chinese government and, you know, shutting off a U.S. Person's access, it just shows that they have always put growth hacking and getting more users and placating others above the actual user base. And people pay for their product. Like, that's the thing. Like, you can't even say that this is a Google type of thing where you're the product. No, people pay a lot of money for Zoom. And Zoom has proven over and over and over again, I don't care who they hire, like, at a fundamental level with the company, they really care about getting more users and getting more contracts and making more money. And they don't care about the actual customers. And so for me, I won't use it. I mean, if I'm forced to, if somebody sends me a link with it, I'm obviously not going to not take the meeting because it's in Zoom. I'm not that hardcore, but I don't have an account. I won't give them my information. I'll use it only in a web browser, and I don't trust them. I just don't.
When the Keybase acquisition happened, Mr. Laporte was pretty pissed off about it.
Yeah, you and I had just started connected on Keybase.
Yeah, I challenged you on being pissed off about it, but I see where you're coming from. You saw the history, and you wasn't feeling it. And this right here is just looking like yet another point of proving you right. You know.
Well, I was sad because I used Keybase, but far more people use Zoom than Keybase. So the net was a good thing if the Keybase guys, who were some of the best crypto guys in the world, go to Zoom and add that crypto.
Right.
The world's benefiting. I'm losing Keybase, and I found replacements for it, so it's not the end of the world. But it actually was the stimulus to create this server over here and a new website so that I had my own controlled website. But and Git and all that stuff. But when I have to say, I've lost a little respect for Alex Stamos as well, who's defending this. And, you know, he was the security guy at Facebook who left when he found out about Cambridge Analytica because they didn't tell him. He was the security guy before that at Yahoo who left because Yahoo didn't tell him about the billion record breach. Seems like Stamos, I don't know why he has such a good reputation. He's obviously very smart, but it seems like he's leaving burning buildings quickly. And I got to wonder how the fire started under his watch, right?
I was going to say, was he striking the match?
Yeah.
No, I love Alex in a lot of ways because he's a good security guy, but he does have this uncanny knack of jumping out of the building just before it goes
up
in flames.
Just before it happens.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, and collecting the paychecks and signing the NDAs so he can't talk about it.
So Alex got on Twitter and defended Zoom. But what he said was kind of interesting. He basically, if you go through all of these tweets defending him, he basically said, we designed a system for them, but we're not implementing it, so I wash my hands of it.
Mm-hmm. Money, buddy, you don't have to do it.
Yeah, he doesn't have to do it. And then Zoom issued on June 4th, a statement that I think causes real cause for concern. They said Zoom's AES encryption is turned on for all Zoom users, free and paid. Zoom does not proactively monitor meeting content. By the way, note that word proactively. Zoom does not proactively, in other words, we don't on our own monitor meeting content. We do not share information with law enforcement, except in circumstances like child sex abuse. Who could argue against that? Except, wait a minute. If you have end-to-end encryption, how could you share anything with law enforcement at all under any circumstance? Right. We do not have back doors where participants can enter meetings without being visible to others. None of this will change. Zoom's end-to-end encryption plan balances the privacy of its users with the safety of vulnerable groups, including children and potential victims of hate crimes. They're basically saying, I do not think that term means what you think it means, end-to-end encryption. Ending an encryption means Zoom can't in any form or fashion see what you're doing. But they've said, unless there's child sexual activity abuse, then okay. But that means you have the keys.
Right.
I mean, look, it's not an invalid stance to take. Just don't call it end-to-end
encryption. Just don't call it end-to-end encryption.
Yeah. And I'm personally bothered and frankly a little bit insulted by the rhetoric where they go, oh, well, you know, we care so much about privacy and safety of this group, and that's why we're going to work with law enforcement. BlackBerry did the exact same thing.
Of course.
And always think
of the children. Always.
Exactly. And it's like, okay, again, this is a valid stance to take, to say we value working with law enforcement other than other groups. That's fine. But don't try to gaslight us into what you're doing is actually the moral and noble thing. And claim that you have end-to-end encryption when you obviously, by its very definition, do not.
Yeah, I mean, it's the four horsemen of the apocalypse. So you've got pedophiles, organized crime, drug dealers, and terrorists. And these are always the same excuses which are rolled out for saying, yeah, we should have the right to say everyone's communications. And, you know, come on, we've grown beyond this.
Yeah, and I have to say, it's weird that Alex Stamos, on the one hand, says, oh, yeah, there's end-to-end encryption. And then at the end, he says, at no time does Zoom turn over the encryption keys to law enforcement. Do they have the keys? At no time does Zoom turn over the encryption keys to law enforcement. The issue here is whether Zoom's own employees can enter spaces they host, which is how all major trust and safety teams operate, and which is precluded by good E2E. But they have the keys, so they can. So it's not good E2E. Alex, which is it? So I'm a little disheartened. I had higher opinion of Alex Stamos before this. And I have to say, look, everybody uses Zoom. I have to use Zoom.
Unfortunately.
We use it at work because all our clients use Zoom and they want Zoom. Yeah. I can't convince them to use Jitsi. Sorry, but I can't. I tried. So we have to live with it. But understand, it is not end-to-end encrypted in the way that it's traditionally understood. They have the keys.
No.
Period.
Not at all.
Period. And then, yeah, I agree with you, Christina. Then just say it. That's a legitimate stance. We have to have the keys. It is not end-to-end encrypted because we have to protect you. Is there any, and by the way, Stamos says, well, nobody else is end-to-end either.
Yeah, but they're not claiming that they are.
They're not claiming that
makes
they
it
are.
Right.
They're not selling themselves as that.
FaceTime is end-to-end, one-to-one, right?
Yeah.
Is FaceTime, are they group meetings? You can only go up to 32 people. Those are all encrypted end-to-end, right? Or does Apple have the keys?
No, Apple doesn't have the keys, but also, yes, 32 people, and it's you can't share it with the web browser, and it's not.
Yeah, there are a lot of reasons. There are a lot of things you can't do if it's end-to-end encrypted.
Right, exactly. I mean, which is why the other services aren't. When you're end-to-end encrypted, there are trade-offs, and right. For most business use cases, those trade-offs are not worth it. Again, that's okay, and you can explain that. But to say we have end-to-end encryption when you don't, it's disingenuous and you don't, no one else is claiming that they have that level of security.
And you know, the reason you and I brought up that last year's story is because they were disingenuous then too. It seems to be how they operate. So I don't trust them. The sad thing is, and for our business sales calls, who cares if Zoom's listening in or not?
Right.
I don't care. But there are therapists and psychiatrists and doctors who use Zoom to talk to patients. That's not secure. So don't.
No, I mean, my next door neighbors on both sides, one is a teacher for grade school students. One is a music teacher on the other side. They rely on Zoom.
Yeah. Everybody does.
Yeah. When PG&E cut our twice down the last couple of weeks, PG&E has killed the internet access. That's their livelihood gone. So, you know. I don't know. We're all relying on this in an age of social distancing.
Yeah. Well, it's okay because, honestly, messaging isn't secure in most cases. I can't convince everybody to use Signal. If they want to be secure, they should use Signal.
Definitely.
And understand that most other, you know, Apple Messages is mostly secure. It's kind of secure enough. That's fine. Or Telegram or... You know, it's fine. Just don't do it for stuff, you know, spy stuff.
Yeah. And I think there is a difference when even if you don't have an end-to-end encryption and even if you're not like going that far, there is a big difference in basically saying, okay, a country reached out to us and said that someone who is residing in a different country is accessing a chat that we don't like and is going to be doing something and them intervening like
that's shocking.
Act right there. I'm sorry. That's really problematic to me.
Yeah.
I would be just as bothered if any of the other companies did that too, to be very clear. I'd be just as bothered. But the fact that like their response to that, which is basically like, oh, well, we won't do it again.
Yeah.
Based on all the other history of things, like if that was the very first thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this was the very first thing, kind of like what you said, Leo. It's like we go back to what happened a year ago because this is a pattern of behavior. And over time, like at least to me, every scandal that's happened, they keep saying, we're sorry, we're sorry.
Yeah, it's
won't
very
happen
Zuckerberg,
again.
Isn't it?
And then another scandal happens and it becomes very clear. It's like, you're not sorry. You just don't care.
Right.
And
you're sorry you got caught. That's
right.
What I'm sorry. And Ian, I have to correct you. It's not Honest Engine. It's Honest First Nations. Okay. Let's get that right.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate it. And you're right. it's just,
it's hard. Old habits die hard. And I wasn't really ragging on you. I was making a joke, but
No. Exactly. It's just, these things carry on and it's up to us to actually make a change.
That's right.
And say, look, yes, it was our history. Now let's move on.
Let's move on. Here's some really good news. I've been plugging this amazing video game bundle deal from itch.io. 1,705 games now for $5. Independent, 1,300 independent creators donated their games. It was to raise money for racial justice and equality. The money was divided 50-50 between the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund and the Community Bail Fund. Their goal was $5 million. They have to date raised $6.7 million.
Marvelous.
That's what's up. Nice.
And there's still a day to go. Let's get it to 10, kids.
Yeah.
I mean, what a deal. Look at all the games. I mean, it goes on and on and on. It's not just games. It's content. It's all sorts of stuff. Any one of these games would be worth $5. But how about 1,700 of them for $5?
But I mean, this is what's been really interesting about the internet in terms of fundraising.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Bernie Sanders ran an entire presidential campaign based on microtransactions.
Yep.
Games are now, you know, you can't sell a game unless you've got microtransactions in there. It's these small amounts of money that add up to something really big. Go for right. it. Yeah.
I think it's so great. And it's what's really interesting is for all the guff gamers get and the heat and the negative attention, gamers consistently, this has happened again and again, have donated huge amounts to good causes. They pony up when time comes. And we've seen this again and again on Twitch. We've seen it here. It's really pretty impressive. ITCH.io. There's a day and a few hours left if you want to help out. I think that's great. And you know what? Most people spend more than $5. The average contribution is $10. But I think that's really cool. Really, really cool. Aunt Pruitt, you're really cool. Hands-on photography. Hands-on wellness.
Moments.
He's on Instagram, @_Pruitt. And we love you, and we're so glad you're here. And I'm so glad to see Isaac's poster behind you.
Not Isaac.
Jacob.
Jacob.
Sorry, Jacob. Jacob's the young one. Jacob's the middle schooler, right? Isaac's the high schooler.
Jacob and Isaiah, the two hard heads.
Sorry. I got the I part.
You did.
Hashtag you. Isaiah, not Isaac. Okay.
Right,
hashtag Black Lives Matter, no justice, no peace. Right on. Hashtag We Matter. That's awesome.
That's right.
That's beautiful.
Thank you for allowing us to share this message. And thank you to you and Mrs. Laporte for taking a stand and taking a side and saying, you know what, we're against this bull crap of racism and openly putting it out there to everyone in the Twit audience. It really does mean
for
a lot that you
time,
amplified a message.
Yeah, I really wanted to kind of stay apolitical because I thought, well, we're the toy store. But sometimes something comes along, you can't sit back.
Yeah, you gotta take a side.
You got to take a side. And I'm just so proud of our company and our team because and you and Micah, our two black employees, it does matter. And sometimes you just have to take a stand. And you know what? We get heat for it, but I don't care. Like as Jeff Bezos said, he don't like it. Screw you.
That's right. You know, I've said it a gazillion times that, you know, I can present my message every single day, but it's not as amplified if it's not coming from someone like you, Mr.
Well, we're glad to amplify your message
or the other non-colored listeners out here in the Twit network, because that's who's going to help us get that message amplified and help lead this society to a better change.
I agree. We all have to stand up for justice. It's just the right thing to do. Thank you, Ant. Really appreciate
thank
it.
You.
And I also think English lives matter.
Yes.
But not as much. I just
they clearly
say,
have the best breakfast.
Definitely have the worst breakfast.
No, we have the great breakfast, but we also have learned from America, as the great Howard Zinn put it, you can't stay neutral on a moving train. Let's get this thing done.
Yeah. Howard Zinn's The People's History of the United States is a must read. I don't know why they don't teach it in high schools. They really ought to. Maybe they do now. I hope they do. Thank you, Ian. TheRegister.com. He's at Ian Thompson, spelled properly, IAINTHOMSON.
But although for some reason the Americans seem to think that's Lane. Who is called Lane?
No, it's not Lane. It's an I. He's got more letters than he ought to in the first name, fewer letters than he ought to in the last name. That's all you need to remember. He's Ian Thompson. Thank you, Ian. It's a
pleasure. Past participle, Thompson.
Past participle. I lane. I have lane. I did lane. Past participle Thompson. I like it. You have a new name, Ian.
I'm almost tempted to get that tattooed.
I don't think it'd fit on those scrawny biceps. You got to do some lifting first.
True.
Get those going. Hey, it's so great to see you, film girl. You're awesome. I'm glad we got the right camera. What happened? Did the camera die? I don't know.
No, it was overheating for some reason. I think because of the light coming in.
But that's why those cameras turn off after 30 minutes. They say the chip gets too hot.
Yeah, and there might be a setting that I need to change because I've been using it for Zoom calls for weeks and it's been fine, but I'll figure it out. But
there it is. By the way, that in a nutshell is the entire tech community. We hate Zoom, but I've been using Zoom calls for weeks. So what can you do?
And actually, I mean Teams calls. And see, this is the problem. I'm not even on Zoom calls. I'm on Teams calls. But yeah,
No one knows what you're talking about. I say I'm on a Teams call. What, you mean Zoom? Yeah, Zoom.
Yeah, I'm like, same thing, whatever.
I might be the one person.
She is great on Rocket. You can find that on Relay FM. She is great wherever she goes, Channel 9, Microsoft, Senior Cloud Advocate, and of course on the Twitter, film_girl. Is there anything else you want to plug that I haven't?
No, I mean, I think that's it. Black Lives Matter. That's my only plug.
Right on.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you, lady.
Right on.
Thank you.
Damn, we love you guys. Thank you for being here. And we'll see you next time.
This
another
is
twit
amazing.
Is in the can. Doing the twit.